What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome to episode 84 of Value Town. I'm Chanman V, and joining me, of course, is my partner in crime, Noxious. What's going on, buddy?
Nothing much, dude. Just pretty excited to talk about the HCT today with TJ. It's pretty cool to have some like tournament. You know, somebody was at the actual event casting it because it's one of the few times where I've watched the entire thing from A to Z live. I usually don't have time.
Watch the whole thing. That's awesome.
It's a lot harder to find time for that, but so into it this time around, and it was just a crazy experience. So, anyway.
Awesome. And of course, he already said, we have our first time guest, TJ Sanders, aka Asimo. I can't believe this is the first time I'm having you on Value Town. That's pretty hard to believe, but welcome to the show, buddy.
Thanks. I've been floating around the depths of the Hearthstone scene.
I was telling Yaksha's last time, like, what the hell? Like, I've never had TJ on the show, so sometimes it just slips out of. I don't know what I'm thinking sometimes. So really happy to have you on the show, man. This is going to be a lot of fun. Talking some decks, talking some Karazhan Wings, and then obviously HTT NA prelims too.
I found it funny that Noxious said he watched the whole thing. I was there and I didn't even watch the whole thing.
I watched the whole thing. Some of it I watched most of it live, and some of it was like a delay when the kid woke up, and so I had to go pick him up, and then back. It's like 3 a.m. and I should be sleeping because I know he's going to wake me up at like 7, but I'm still watching Hearthstone. So I feel like the whole meta game right now is pretty interesting to watch, because I was expecting more of the same stuff. It turned out to be a bit more diverse than I anticipated.
Yeah, and we'll jump into that once we get to that segment. And we've got all their decks, and you know, we'll talk about just all the different players and who surprised maybe TJ and just the rest of us that were watching it too. But let's start off with what we always do. We always jump into what we've been doing this week, or at least what we've been doing in terms of Hearthstone this week. And the first thing I want to talk about is just Wing 2, you know, the Opera Wing. And wanted to see what our experiences were. Was it easy? Was it hard? What'd you guys think?
I thought, personally, like, I don't know about everyone else, but I had to make YouTube videos for that, because I usually just make those. And it turned out that I never saw Twisting Nether against the Crone.
Yeah, me either.
My first attempt against her on normal and heroic was Inner Fire turn one, and it was over. So I never really got there.
No,
I feel like every encounter had a lot more... A lot less punish, I feel like, that they usually put in adventures. So I wonder if maybe League of Explorers wasn't quote unquote too hard for a lot of players on some like encounters, and they decided to tone it down a bit to make it a bit more accessible. I don't know.
You guys might be surprised to hear this. I've actually never completed heroic anything.
What?
The card back value, man. You're missing
such a noob,
man. I've never completed heroic anything. I rush through as fast as I can. I usually play face hunter, tempo mage. I'm that guy. I get the cards and I go right to ladder. That's what I do.
I
only use the Tespa card back ever. Never use anything else. And
okay.
So I don't need card backs. Maybe the Golden Celebration, if that one ever becomes accessible, if I ever win a championship.
Go ahead, good luck, but you can do it.
Thanks.
I believe in you, TJ.
Thanks, man. I qualified for prelims this time around, but I chose to cast it instead.
Oh, okay.
I was like, 99.
Not going to double time it? Like, who does that?
They wouldn't let me.
I guess they wouldn't let me. Yeah, that's true.
You see the decks, you face off against them. I mean, everybody sees the decks. It wouldn't even matter, would it? I guess it's just a matter of...
No, it doesn't matter. It's just more of scheduling, and I don't know. Maybe it's not fair to the other casters. I don't know.
Yeah, the Google Doc gets spread around quickly anyway with all the deck lists.
Yeah, totally.
Casters usually get first access to it from the admins, just so we can study up. But it usually gets around to players very quickly. So
yeah. Well, that's cool that you qualified for it, man. That's really cool. I can't believe you haven't done your heroic, man.
I mean, I didn't do heroic Blackrock Mountain at all.
I can't remember which one it was. I never got a chance to go back and finish the last boss, but...
can't be bothered.
Yeah. This one for me was super easy. Like, I did normal, heroic, and the class challenges in an hour 10, which is really, really fast. I mean, and the Crone, like you said, so there are three bosses. You know, there was... Julianne, right? The whole Romeo and Juliet thing, the Big Bad Wolf, and then the Crone, which was the whole Wizard of Oz thing. And the one that took me the longest was the first one, the Julianne one. That took me probably like about 4 or 5 tries, and then finally killed it. I can't remember what deck I used, though. I think I just used a Divine Paladin, you know, just one of those rush Paladin decks, and just killed her.
Sure. You just rush them down. They can't really get value trades in that deck. Yeah. So, yeah, it makes a lot of sense. It was a pretty easy wing, like, just overall.
Yeah. The Crone, too. I didn't do Inner Fire. I did the Chosen One instead. Basically, the Chosen One. No, that's the Big Bad Wolf. Sorry. The Big Bad Wolf, I did the Chosen One.
What is the Chosen One?
The one where it's the 299, the 99s, two, and the 299s fuse. Oh, the into blood 30, of the,
okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the blood of the
ancient one.
Oh, the ancient one, the ancient one.
Sorry, that's dude, I just got confused. The ancient I had one, no sorry. Idea.
I was like, okay, I was thinking of something else. Yeah, the ancient one. I basically just put two of those. Actually, one of those, I had two of them and two faceless manipulators, and I just drew one of each, and they were both 1/1s and turned into a 30/30 GG, like in the
that's
fourth,
pretty, yeah, I didn't
four.
Even bother with that. That's cool. I just went to Nyxia and went.
Yeah, Nyxia is pretty good too. Yeah. And then the Crone, I just used the same Divine Paladin deck and just won. I mean, she never got to turn 7. So I never saw Twisting Nether. I didn't even know what people were even talking about until I saw like Toast's video and things like that. That was really strange, yeah. But thematically, I thought, you know, just the themes, I thought it was really cool. It's obviously this kind of, I don't know, what would you say, fairy tale plus, I don't know, well, literature, it's Shakespeare like, kind of thing.
I mean, it's Shakespearesque, really. Like, I don't know. Like, TJ, did you play any WoW?
Oh, yeah. I raided
okay, well, there we go.
More so than any other raid, so.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. So, like, the encounter definitely felt like it captured what the actual encounters were back then. Sure. Like, it felt like they tried to make it happen. And I think they succeeded so far. Like, the aesthetic of the Karazhan raid is probably better than League of Explorers, although I'm biased because I played WoW, probably. I just really like the way they made all the scenes. I don't know. It felt good, man.
For sure. They've been good. I mean, even the humor, I think, has been top-notch or the best out of all of them.
Yeah. Fucking morose.
Yeah, morose. Yeah, still cracking his jokes in Wing 2. I'm sure we'll see him in Wing 3 coming up. But after the Wing 1, I'd have to say Wing 2 is just a little bit disappointing, given how, like, Wing 1 with the chess board was just amazing. That was literally the best boss. Hard to live up to that one.
Yeah, it's just an entire, like, it's like a tavern brawl within the Karazhan raid.
Yeah.
From what I hear, they've got, like, we saw screenshots of other encounters coming up. I want to see the Nightbane fight with the little portals that you have to, like, block with minions.
Nether Spite,
yeah, another Nightbane one. But, like, you have to really block the portals with minions in order for them not to reach the boss so you can, like, prevent the boss.
Oh, wow.
It sounds pretty cool.
It does sound
like
cool.
A raid. Oh, I remember Nether Spite in actual Karazhan and WoW, and it was...
Am I gonna have to balance.
It was also a retard check. Like, you knew in your raid who was really, really underperforming and didn't pay attention.
Yeah.
That was pretty crazy.
Sounds like I might have to play Hogger in this one, or at least the new Hogger in this one, if we're going to put minions up and taking damage and stuff like that. That could probably be
similar, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so Wing 3 comes out, of course, tomorrow. We always do Value Town right before the Wing, which is kind of a bummer. But all the new cards are coming out, too. Some powerful cards. Like, which ones are you looking forward to?
The Beast one.
You really looking forward to that one? Are you really?
I mean, are you looking forward to it? Or are you just want to see whether or not it lives up to the brokenness we expect?
Yeah, I told you I care not for flavor or humor. I care for power. That is it, man.
That is
powerful
power.
Powerful cards feed me.
Do you plan to play Druid or try to find a way? Because I feel like the deck, like, it's doing pretty well right now. Like the Beast Druid in general, the archetype, and that's kind of like the extra step they're gonna push Beast Druid with.
Yeah.
And my question is that Druid deck better than, say, a Hunter right now? Like, if you were to make both decks, which of them really performs better? Because I feel like the Hunters have the tools to punish the Druid for trying to play this 6 drop.
That's a good question. It's pretty similar.
They both do the same thing almost.
Yeah.
They're both there to punish greedy decks. And I honestly think that Beast Druid needs like one thing. And one thing beyond the Menagerie, I don't even know what it's called. Menagerie what? What is it?
Warden.
Menagerie Warden. They need like one more thing besides that. They need something that helps them stick something on the board early game. They have Druid of the Saber, which is great because you're guaranteed a beast, and then they have Mark of Yashiraj. But they need one more thing: a Death Rattle minion that leaves something behind. If they got kind of grandmother,
not the raptor.
No, it's not good enough.
No, it's like it needs to be. It needs to be like a 3-mana 4/2 with that ability if it even wants to see play.
Oh
like
my gosh, 4. That'd be crazy.
So, yeah. Ebola, pure Ebola, but yeah,
totally like, Ebola.
But like something like I don't know. I really like Cat Trick, which is the hunter trap that whenever someone casts a spell,
Let me show the, let me show these cards while we're talking about it. Actually.
Okay.
Here we go. Yeah, keep talking. Keep talking.
If that was in Druid somehow, I know Druids can't have secrets. It's not thematic. It doesn't make sense. But if that was in Druid somehow, some a stronger minion than Druid of the Saber that was sticky.
Yeah,
like, I mean, I can't imagine that. Like,
tempo card.
Yeah, even if it was like a, even if it, you like tacked that on to if Mount of Raptor was instead a 5-mana something that gave you a stealth something afterwards, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Like something that you get value out of it beyond just playing it onto the board and have it be a beast. Yeah. And I think that'd be great because, I mean, there was a lot of players that had success over the past weekend in prelims that played Beast Druid. Rosti made it all the way into 9th through 12th, which is fantastic performance in prelims after falling in the lower bracket early, playing Beast Druid. And he beat a lot of players that weren't even playing decks that it beat. So I don't know. It's I feel like it's almost there. Maybe Menagerie Warden's enough to put it over the edge, but I think it's almost there.
Yeah, Jungle Panther is a card that I actually am looking forward to trying out in that list. As bad as it seems on paper, I just I feel like having more stealth gives you not even just more Menagerie Warden potential. Just you can, you might just be able to smork people down. You know, if you just shove all the stealth. It's interesting to think about.
Well, I think that's generally how you have to play Beast Druid. I mean, right now, you know, there's just maybe those one or two turns, maybe a few turns where they're willing to trade. But at some point with Beast Druid, even right now, you have to go face. So I can't even imagine getting just some crazy tempo, just an amazing tempo play at 6 and being in the same position. It's just going to be awesome. Even if you're playing Panther, even if you only get value from a Panther, it's still amazing from that card.
Yeah.
They struggle a lot with card advantage is a big thing. Mark of Yashiraj isn't enough. They have zero card draw outside of that, unless you surf in and get life tap.
Yeah.
Or Cycle Wrath, I guess.
Or Cycle Wrath, which is weak in a deck that just wants to hit you in the face.
Yep.
So having a card that Jungle Panther is good, but it doesn't, once you hit them in the face for 4 or 6 with Mark of Yashiraj, that's it. That's its life. That's what it's done. And that's a great tool, but it doesn't help in the weaknesses of Beast Druid, which is you just run out of stuff. And so maybe with Stranglethorn Tiger, with Menagerie Warden, Stranglethorn Tiger is going to be really good. It was borderline good in Beast Druid before. Maybe now it'll be really good. Maybe it'll be more of a mid-range deck instead of a aggro deck.
Yeah, I have a list for Beast Druid that I think, like, you know, the big card draw problem that the deck runs into? I kind of tackled...
Don't tell me Cold Oracle. Don't tell me
Cold Oracle. No. Good Lord, no. God forbid. No like way. A lot of people were running Wild Growth in some lists, which I think is incorrect in that deck. I think it's much better to run like a double Azure Drake at the top end, double Azure the Claw, double Stranglethorn. So you go like 6/5 drops, and then you run, you know, double Wrath, double Mark of Isharj. So you have like Druid of the Saber, Mounted Raptor, you cut Druid of the Flame, and you just end up with like this. You curve out on 1/2 pretty consistently with Power of the Wild, Druid of the Saber, Mark. You have Mounted Raptor on 3. That's like your only turn where it's sometimes pretty dry. But between Innervate and like 5 drops, oftentimes your 5 drops just come out on 3. And then you have 4s with like 1 Fandral, 1 Combatant. I mean, 2 Combatants. And you can just do okay, I feel, with that type of deck. You just have to play Double Roar right now because there's no Menagerie Warden.
Well, the nice thing about playing Azure Drakes in it also is that Curator becomes a card you can play too, right? And you can draw 2 cards from that. It's almost like Ancient of Lore, old style, right, with the draw. So that can actually help too. I just think running 2 Menagerie Wardens, that's so good. It's good.
Curator is probably going to be strong.
Yeah.
It's a cool card, but it is just, I can't help but look at it and feel like that's just... dumb.
What?
I don't know. And like, I look at it, and I just every time I look at it, I'm like, I hate that card. And everything about that card I hate.
Well, I mean, it's like, you know how Ancient of Lore either gave you health or two cards? This one gives you two cards and six health. So it's like, I'm mitigating damage with that body because it has taunt, and I'm drawing two. So it's doing both things at once, right?
You draw three?
No, like, you can potentially draw three on paper if you have one Murloc. But
draw three. But
I'm putting in a Booga Warrior every time.
What? Oh my god.
I guess it thins the deck, and it's like a Drew the Saber for aggro purposes. So
It's true. Removal. It's
true. It is removal.
Damage that you can get for free, and if you're playing Curator, you're probably going to play other stuff that synergizes with it, like the Zoo Bot.
I don't know how much you can, like, how deep you can go.
It gets a little messy. Yeah, it gets a little messy doing that. Like,
if you're playing Curator, you got to go.
You gotta go.
TJ's just deep, like, fuck it.
Balls deep.
That's why that card is. That's why I say it's dumb, because it's like it just baits. It's just gonna bait people into making poor decisions
with
their decks.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I hope we see some of that.
But it has the flexibility of like baiting people, and also people playing it, you know, in a more calculated way. But yeah, getting back to the Beast Druid, I think it's going to be good. Yeah, absolutely.
Sir Finley also is another one. Guaranteeing Sir Finley is no joke. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's going to fit with a 4/6 taunt for 7, but just the flexibility of it. There's going to be some decks that are going to be able to use that.
I mean, at least you thin your deck late game, right? Because Finley's so bad to draw late game if you don't need the 1/3 body. So just maybe just removing it out of your deck. Like, you draw it early, you're happy. You never draw it, and you pick up Curator. At least now it's out, and it's never going to be that dead draw you never want to see. So that could be another way to use the...
All right, so I'm looking at these ratings. Like, so I'm on this HearthstoneTopDecks.com site, and I'm looking at these star ratings here, right? And you know, Purify, you think Purify would get a 0, right? But it actually got a 1.7. Purify. So Purify
1.7 is really bad.
Yeah, but
you have to account for the trolls.
Compare it to Runic Egg, which got a 1.9.
Oh, TJ's just like, you know, there's like, people don't actually believe the ratings they're giving this card, so just take it with a grain of salt, Chen.
These are almost the same rating, these two cards.
Extensive research on the rating system on Hearthstone Top Decks, and do you know that I can't remember it right now, but see if you can, if you have time, look at the highest rated card
of all time
on Hearthstone Top Decks. You'll never guess what it is.
Okay, let me guess. We gotta make a guess now that you brought this up.
Yeah, now I've actually got to guess. I'm gonna go with the Junkbot.
No. Okay. I can get this. Let me think.
The Hearthstone Top Decks is like a perfect example of how community perception of cards before they're released is flawed.
Okay. Let me see. If that's the case, what is the highest rated? I'd say Ysera.
Trogzor, for sure.
Ysera. What is it? He doesn't even know.
I don't know. It would surprise me.
I would.
You have to give me time here for a second.
It's going to be Trogzor. Oh, I thought you knew, man. Okay.
No, I was just trying to make a point, but go look at it if you can real quick.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay. Well, anyways, getting back to, I guess, the next week. I think my the one I'm most excited about, believe it or not, is the Nightbane Templar, because I want to play Dragon Paladin. I've been wanting to play Dragon Paladin for a while now, and I think that might actually give me the ability to do so.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's going to be pretty good. One thing that Dragon Paladin struggled with was getting through the early game, and this card's going to help a lot.
It's the new muster for battle, in a way, in my opinion.
Yeah, it kind of is, but like the thing is, muster did not exist in the metagame of Ravaging Ghouls, so it's like we have to see whether or not that ends up being too much of a detriment. I don't think it will be, but it's one of those cases where it's kind of hard to see whether or not it'll have room, because like it causes meta shifts, that type of deck, pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Noxious? Which one are you looking forward to?
I don't even know which exact cards we're getting next week, but like,
you can see it. You can see it. I'm showing them.
Yeah, the Watcher's kind of meh. Like, I'm not sure yet how to evaluate the card. It's like, it's kind of like evaluating a card like Cloaked Huntress. A lot of people are undervaluing it. Runic Egg is probably a card that, I mean, I think that card is insanely good.
That's what I mean. Really, that's why the ratings are just hilarious here.
Yeah. Wait, is it a 2 out of 5?
No, it's a 1. Okay, so Purify is 1.7 out of 5.
Sure.
And Runic Egg is 1.9.
That's interesting. I think Runic Egg is actually pretty good.
I think Runic Egg is decent. I mean, it's at the very least decent.
Catrick is literally broken.
It's not great, but it's not. It's decent, man, you know.
Catrick's going to be really good.
Catrick is just a broken card. Like, if you thought Bear Trap was an issue, wait until you try to remove their shit and you just can't. Like, Cloaked Huntress into Cat Trick is the worst thing. If Hunters ever struggle to get to turn 8, it's over. Like, now they're always getting there. There's no way you're going to stop them.
Yeah, it is going to be quite tough.
Just so people don't get mad at me for baiting them and then not giving the answer, the set I was talking about was from Whispers of the Old Gods when I was checking.
Oh,
true.
The highest rated card in Hearthstone top decks. Oh, wow, I'm huge on the screen. The highest rated card was Master of Evolution.
Really?
Master of Evolution was going to fix Shaman more so than
7/7 Rain Flame Reef.
More so than a 4-mana 7/7.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
More so than any other card in the set. They thought that. And another one, Shadowcaster, was rated the same as Flame Reef Faces.
Okay. Yeah.
Really?
It was. Yeah.
Perception. What the hell? Community perception.
Yeah. That makes no sense at all.
It's when Flaming Faces first came out, people were kind of skeptical if it was actually going to be good because of the overload costs or in the game.
Well, I guess BGH wasn't. Well, it was nerfed, right? They announced the nerf.
Well, they announced the nerf when they announced when they did the first reveal of cards, and Flaming Faces didn't come until later.
So the nerf was already there.
The nerf was already. Yeah, I'm pretty sure because I remember I was
really.
Well, anyway, a 7/7 in an environment with a 5-minute BGH and Dr. Boom being gone, it's pretty hard to counter, you know? It's
yeah.
Well, your point is though, that the community perception is obviously quite different than what can be reality. Yeah. But, you know, a lot of the pros, they don't have the benefit of having a website actually show all of their predictions either for here till eternity. There's some YouTube videos, though, but not a site that statistically shows it. Anyways, Ring 3, going to be exciting, and I can't wait to definitely try out those cards tomorrow. Well, why don't we talk about some decks that we've put together, or decks that we've been playing this week in our Deck Tech segment here. And all right, so why don't I start off, because I got a couple different ones
ahead.
we can start off our discussion with. So I've been playing some Shaman, and I've been playing Priest. All of you guys know I love Priest. So why don't we talk about let's talk about the Priest deck first, because I kind of wanted to lead that into a Barnes discussion. So I'm throwing this out there. This one has some similarities to actually the one that Noxious plays too. Oh, Noxious, I have your cam's kind of gone here.
Gone. Okay,
yeah,
sure.
I don't know where it went there. I'll have to fix that in a second. But yeah, so it has some similarities in terms of, I guess, the end. Not your cam, the cam on the overlay. I'll fix it.
Sure.
But yeah, so here it is. It's your typical kind of resurrect deck. Lots of good value resurrect minions like the Injured Blade Master, like Ysera, Sylvanas, even Shifting Shade. The only thing in Priest of the Feast, the only thing that's bad is really Barnes himself. And you could make a claim that Wild Pyro is bad, but there are times that Wild Pyro just saves you too on the Resurrect, killing a bunch of
man, I am disappointed.
What?
There are 17 spells in that deck.
And there's no Yawk.
There's no Yawk.
I'm just trying not to play Yawk in this
He's
deck.
Right.
17 spells.
I could have played Yogg, I know, but I'm just trying to play Yogg. I'm trying not to play Yogg in this one.
I see.
So I just added the Forbidden Shaping, just some different stuff. But but Barnes, you know, Barnes has been great. I mean, obviously the 1/1 hitting Ysera, hitting, you know, Sylvanas, or even Shifting Shade, stealing an extra steal. Obviously, really, really good. This isn't, you know, I think this is pretty close to what a lot of people play. The only thing that's worth discussing really is just not having the Circle and Aconi package, or, you know, the Flash Heal package, but using the whole Holy Smite and Wild Pyro, even the Shadow Word Pain type of package to deal with aggro. What are your thoughts on that?
That's sort of the part about Priest that makes them not that great. It's because all of their removal has anti-synergy with the rest of, like, their deck. I don't know, if you play Wild Pyromancer and the rest of your package, it makes Resurrect and Onyx Bishop worse most of the time. If you play Aconi Soul Priest and plus Circle of Healing, those are cards that aren't good with the rest of your deck, because Aconi Soul Priest has anti-synergy with just about everything else you play if you don't play like the Flash Heal package or things like that, because you already have direct damage with Holy Smite. and you have Priest of the Feast, which means if you have Priest of the Feast on the board, you really don't want to play Aquanite Soul Priest because you're damaging yourself.
I've been in that situation many times, man. Yeah.
And Excavated Evil and Holy Nova are just way overcosted for what they do in the deck, because you're not going to get to a situation with Excavated Evil. This is impossible. You're not going to be able to develop and play things unless it's like turn 10. And Holy Nova a lot of times just doesn't hit good stuff. A Shaman board is not usually filled with two health things. It's usually filled with three health things or more. So Holy Nova rarely finds value unless you can find a Pyromancer with it. So everything just has anti-synergy with each other. And I feel like it's one of the problems with Priest, but this is maybe one of the better lists that I've seen. I really don't like Aquanite right now. So
yeah,
I think you could put another Forbidden Shaping in, maybe cut something in the middle, the mid range, and put a Yogg in there and boom.
Yeah. You cut two Shifting Shades. Yeah. You add in Forbidden Shaping and find a Yogg.
There you go.
You could definitely cut Shifting Shade. The thing I like about Shifting Shade is just the ability. It's like it's a form of card draw for Priest, and there isn't a ton of card draw in this deck. A lot of people say you don't need that much card draw on Priest, but in terms of removal, and then when you're playing aggro, you do need card draw just to search for things. Unfortunately, Shifting Shade generally doesn't find you something that clears the board whenever you're playing an aggro deck, but it's still important. And yeah, the way it ends up playing out is either you get a big minion and then, you know, you're pretty much golden out because it's just all the resurrection you can get and keep board and keep fighting it, or you know, you're just hoping for one card that will help you clear the board versus two with the Aconine Circle, which I'd have to wait all the time, you know, like, or I'd have to either save one on the mulligan, you know, just to guarantee a decent percentage against the aggro decks. So this is kind of different. I was watching Kalinta play a similar package, or at least the removal package, and was wanting to play with it a little bit myself, so I ended up trying it out. I know Noxious, you've been playing with it for a while now, actually, this package, right, this removal package. So
you mean the
just the smite and just a smite? And
yeah, I mean, like, I ended up reverting like away from
I know, so like you went the opposite direction to me, which
yeah, like I started off with Holy Smite Pyro in the resurrect list without Northshire.
Yeah,
and I soon realized that just having the option of going Aconite flash heal on someone's face is like it's nice. A lot easier to finish games without relying on tempoing them out as Priest. Like, tempoing people out as Priest is pretty tough. Like, so having the option of just turning on the aggressive gears with Aconite is pretty sweet. Like, a lot of people point out the anti-synergy of Priest of the Feast with Aconite, and you know, that's true to an extent, but like, there's so many cases where it doesn't matter, like in the mid-game, if you get Aconite or not, or if you just have a body on board. Like, a 3-5, you don't even have to play spells with Priest of the Feast. Like, it's just an irrelevance at that point. That anti-synergy comes in when you're trying to play more stuff on the board while Priest of the Feast is there and you have an Aconite in hand. You can navigate around that a lot easier than trying to avoid Pyromancers from Bishop. Like, it's just so bad to get, like, Resurrect into Pyro when you're not prepared for it. Like, it's just absolutely horrible. So I ended up going...
It is a risk every time you do it. Like, if you have board. If you have board and you have the mana to resurrect, or you're wanting to play Bishop on 5, it's a little bit of a risk every time you've lost Wild Pyro. It's the same thing that you encounter whenever... It's even worse, actually, when you're playing Doomsayer, you know, in more of a, I don't know, more of a control type of Priest or something that where you want to guarantee board at some point. So it's kind of like what TJ said. There's a lot of counter synergies, you know, in this. There's a lot of cards that specialize in only against one type of deck, not very versatile. And it's the story of Priest for the most part, and just trying to figure out ways around it has been obviously a challenge, and it's kind of fun. But I did want to talk about Barnes. So there's been a lot of talk.
TJ, what do you want to talk about?
Actually, TJ, you want to jump in?
I had one more point.
Yeah, sure.
I think so. Every deck that's good right now has a strategy where if your opponent doesn't do anything, you'll just hit him in the face and they'll die.
Yeah.
Like that's what's good about
tempo,
a lot of decks.
Yeah. Just mid-range, mid-tempo. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And Priest can't do that. They're never going to get into a situation where they're just going to keep hitting you in your face and you're going to die. They give you so much time. And the good decks right now don't give you time. Aggro Shaman doesn't give you time. Dragon Warrior doesn't give you time. Druid will definitely not give you time. If you leave them alone for a turn, they'll all of a sudden you're looking at a board full of 2/2s and a Violet Teacher. Nothing's giving you time, and Priest gives you time, and you can't do that right now. in Harsha.
So speaking of time, actually, before we get into the Barnes talk, just because you brought that up, we should talk about Firebat's Inner Fire deck that he won the side tournament, right, at the prelims. And let me bring that up, too.
Yeah, the OTK deck.
The OTK deck. So this deck, guys, for those, you know, watching it or listening at home, has one Inner Fire. So the finishing move is more of a... It's an Inner Fire mixed with a Prophet Valen damaging type of package. So we got Circles, we've got the Clerics, the Powered Shields, the Divine Spirits, the Resurrects, Shadow Word Pains, Pyromancers, Acolyte of Pan for draw, Blade Masters, I guess, for more Resurrect synergy.
Target, Resurrect synergy. So, like, yeah. It's not a Prophet Valen Mind Blast OTK. It's an Inner Fire OTK with a Stormwind Knight.
That's right. Yeah.
So, if they leave you alone, you go Stormwind Knight, you Powered Shield, so it's up to 7, double it up to 14, and then to 28 and kill them. So, that's kind of an old OTK that's been around for a long time now. It's not that. Say what?
What?
What did he win?
He won the side event at the prelims.
Yeah. This is like a meme deck.
Yeah, this is a meme deck, but it surprisingly won something.
Was, nobody expects like Priest to be playing an Inner Fire Stormwind Knight OTK, which is one of the funny things because for a while, like I remember a friend of mine, we were spectating at one of his games like a few seasons ago, and he got to like top 50 legend with a like Stormwind Knight OTK Priest, which was just ridiculous to me because like it's just unplayable, it feels like. But the deck was stack all the removal, then hit it in the face for 28, and if they're not a control warrior, they're dead.
Right.
So that was really interesting.
Why does he even have Prophet Valen in this deck?
Well, it's a good way to double heal with Circle of Healing up to eight,
on one of your targets,
such that if it's low on health, you can often just find a way to bring it back up to full to then get the good Inner Fire. Plus, it gives you some shenanigans with...
I don't think you can do damage.
Annihilate game.
Can you even do damage with that thing outside of removing the board? I don't think
with Valen? It's a 7/7, yeah. I mean, with Resurrect and Bishop...
With the spells. There's really no spells that do damage to your opponent.
No.
There's no comboing ability with this, basically.
How many people do you have to beat?
I don't know. I was going to ask him that, but I didn't
think
that's the answer.
I don't know. I can't imagine. You need every single piece of this combo to even do anything remotely strong.
So I'll try to go through the deck.
The rest of the deck is just... There's not even that much cycle unless you get a full board and short Cleric plus Circle of Healing.
I mean, mm-hmm. I think the key is just to get, like, I don't know, Priest of the Feast or, you know, even Stormwind Knight, like Noxious was saying, to just survive a turn, right? And given that you have Resurrects and you have the Onyx Bishop, you get, like, potentially 3 chances at it on average, maybe 2.5 to 3 chances at
More
it.
More than that, man. Like, you get, like, here's the thing. Injured Blade Master from Resurrect, I like, people
overlook
the 7 health on that dude so much because he's never there. That thing is, like, right now what happens with Priest, like, even in the Resurrect decks, is that they have these, let's say, 2 minions on board. One has 3 attack, one has 4. they can punch you in the face for 7, but they have 0 incentive to do so because they have no burst. This deck says, well, I'm going to keep doing shit, and instead of running Power of Whelming because I don't have that garbage, I'm just going to Divine Spirit Inner Fire my 7 health minion and hit you in the face. Suddenly the opponent is just looking down, you know, a 14-14 Blade Master. They throw everything into it. And then you just Onyx Bishop some random crap and finish them off with like 4 damage hits to the face. It's ridiculously stupid the way that works out.
That involves you getting an injured Blade Master on the board, have it be killed, and manage to make it through the early game alive with 2 Resurrects, 2 Divine Spirits, and an Inner Fire in your deck.
Yeah. So
DJ, I mean, giving you context, so you're talking to 2 guys that have probably played this deck, like played Inner Fire decks, like a ton. So, I mean, definitely our experience with
I played Miracle Priest a lot at very end of I can't remember. It was right around the time beginning of Star Ladder where people were playing it because there was just so many control decks.
Yeah.
And You could just OTK control decks because people were getting so greedy with their deck choices. And I saw somebody play it. I can't remember. Nyria or something on Starlight.
Well, Nyria played it. Amnesiac played it. Firebat played it.
Amnesiac played it, but he never practiced with it, so he played it quite poorly.
I remember that game.
That gave me inspiration.
That gave you inspiration. All right.
Whenever I watch somebody play a deck poorly and they still like win or almost win, I'm like, oh my god, this deck it's really good.
Right, if they're exactly. so close to winning while making a mistake, it's got to be something I can win with.
Yeah. Totally. But like, yeah. picture myself winning in that situation, because of course you have more information, you're not actually playing, and I'm like, I'm going to be a god at this deck.
That's right. And then I can tweet it and make videos all about it, right? Yeah. That's the beauty. Yeah, but if you can get stuff to live one turn, especially if you Emperor Thorzan and stuff, right? You can get it to live one turn, then you got a shot at Double Divine. He's got tentacles in this,
It's
too.
Not even the Double Divine, guys. Like, you need to stop. Imagine. It's not an OTK deck. Like,
it is an OTK. It's labeled OTK. It is definitely an OTK deck.
But the Resurrection, like, you can OTK. The thing is, you're aiming to keep board with Resurrect. It's not like you're trying to cycle to kill them. Otherwise, you might as well play the Mind Blast version. It's just straight up better at OTKing. Like, okay. That's just not what it is.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. I'm sold.
You're not sold. Don't lie. Don't lie.
If you can draw all your good cards, never draw your bad cards, and live 20 turns, this deck is great.
It's inconsistent. Exactly.
Great.
It's just really fun.
So I guess our action item is to go and ask Firebat exactly how many matches he won with this thing to actually win a side event.
One. No, just like I switched decks at the end.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Well, going back to that one question I wanted to ask, I guess, concerning Barnes. So the community, you're starting to see some threads pop up now about just, oh gosh, losing, you know, with Barnes on one turn, you know, that sort of thing. We saw like a Yashiraj. I think there's one posted right now, a picture of Barnes getting Yashiraj and it giving him something amazing like Rag, or I forget what the other drag, what the other card was actually that he got. But what are your thoughts on Barnes right now? I mean, is this the, I guess, the son of Yogg, basically, you know, where we have a card that's potentially so powerful or just so RNG-like that it ends games?
Well, sometimes, yes. I think Barnes is really strong, but I think people have sort of a misconception about where Barnes' strengths lie. People are building their decks around Barnes, I think, which is a mistake.
Sure.
People are sort of building 100 decks to make themselves always get a good Barnes target, which I think is a big mistake. I think right now tempo is king, and Barnes is you can't sacrifice the strength of the rest of your deck to make one card stronger that might win you the game.
Right.
And I see people like cutting Houndmasters, both of them in Hunter, because they don't want to get a Houndmaster from Barnes when there's so many good Houndmaster targets right now. I'm seeing people cut out all of their early game from Hunter because they don't want a weak minion from Barnes. They want a Savannah High Main or an Infestable every single time. I think Barnes is great, but I think people need to have realistic expectations that it is one card. Yes, if you get a Savannah High Main from Barnes, you're going to win. Yes, if you play Barnes on 6, get a Questing Adventure and prep Eviscerate the Face, yeah, you're probably going to win. But you shouldn't build your entire deck around Barnes, because even if Barnes misses and pulls out a vanilla 1-1, he's still decent stats.
Still and 4-5.
Rest of your deck is probably better than what it would have been if you had built around Barnes.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree.
You're not always going to draw Barnes, and if you hard mulligan for Barnes, you're doing it wrong anyway in a lot of decks.
Yeah.
So
very often.
Yeah. Noxious, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think like we actually talked about Barnes last week with Zale, and we were basically we came to the conclusion. Me and Zale were saying that, you know, you shouldn't build around Barnes. I know Chanman likes the idea of building around the card more.
To the extent of which like TJ was saying that some people do.
Okay, sure. I think the card is a way for you to solidify tempo leads. And the thing is that the way it's made at 4 mana for a 3/4 plus a 1/1, like you're not sacrificing anything for it really. Like if it was like a 4 mana 2/2, then I'd be like, yeah, it's basically you want to drag Isharge out of your deck,
you have to get
Malagos. Like when it comes to a 4 mana 3/4, suddenly the expectations of its power are a little bit lower, and you're just happy with getting anything out of it. And the fact that so many decks have death rattles nowadays, which was funny since GVG and Naxx rotated it out, like with Infested Wolf being added, Hyamane's in the core set, Kindly Grandmother got added in Hunter. Shaman actually has evolved, which is a fun thing we'll probably end up talking about. Like, there's too many decks in which it's good to not just run it as an almost auto include. It's pretty sick in my mind. I don't know, man.
I'll make a bold. I mean, I agree with both of you guys in terms of this card, and I think it has potential to cause a reaction from the community that we've seen a little bit with Yogg, in terms of just the highest competitive. You know, just we're going to talk about HGT in a second, but you know, I think it has potential to have at least some elements of that, and that's just not good, at least for the competitive scene. I can see this card getting nerfed at some point, at least maybe not the effect, but the
stats. I don't know,
itself,
dude.
The stats it's... itself. I'm making a prediction. Like, I'm going to predict that event at some point in, you know, in down the road, this card will get some kind of body nerf to it.
But then they'd have to
admit.
No, then they'd have to ban the card from formats, and they'd have to print a million new barts. Oh wait, it's digital.
Yeah, I mean, they'd have to literally send everybody a new card through the mail. Be like, sorry for your current barn. Here's the Errata version. That would fucking suck, wouldn't it? I mean,
God,
it's wasted on that process.
I mean, if you would have asked me like a year and a half ago what this card would have been statted, you know, just typical, you know, just dev team, I would have said it would have been a 2-3, maybe even a 2-2, like you were saying. You know, just the.
I mean, it would have been a lower stat. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I would have been okay. Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's one of these things where it's too risky to use in the pro scene. You know, nobody's going to do that, right? And you know, and you can't just you have to build around it to actually get the value. You know, a proper value or value enough that it's worth running. Now, you know, it's a no-brainer. You know, it's like a no-brainer whether you run it or not. And it's just like a matter of just, okay, can I have something that has more synergy with my deck, you know, that than Barnes? But like a Hunter, like all those Hunter cards you talked about. But Barnes right now is just too powerful, and it has a lot to do with just the body, in my opinion. Okay.
Or the cost. Okay, so wait, like here's I keep making that comparison every single time, right?
Yeah.
You must be getting tired of it, but TJ, like, Fendril and Barnes, in my mind, for Druid, kind of feel the same, all right, if this does well, I win the game role, which is, like, at 4 mana, I think these two cards in Druids are just kind of excessive, because it gives them, like, 2 things they can innervate super fucking early and win with.
Fandral is a beautifully designed card. Fandral is, Fandral is incredible.
Sure.
And you notice, I do like Fandral. And Barnes, I think, is a great card. I don't think Barnes is Barnes is really strong.
Come on, it's really good.
I mean, but that's not what's the common denominator in those two scenarios, Noxious?
Innervate. Yep. Always.
I think we're onto something here.
Yeah, Innervate, I mean, it
will never not be in a highly competitive Druid deck because it's too good. Yeah. And I think Fandral is probably one of the most balanced legendaries in the game. Its effect, it's sort of. It limits their design of choose one cards slightly, but they've been really good about which choose one cards they make. Choose one cards are usually great value because they're Druid cards, and you want class cards to be more value than, say, common cards or neutral, sorry.
Sure.
But they haven't printed a choose one card that's just absurd, and I think that Fandral, it's great. I think Fandral's really balanced. I think Innervate is where that's the strength of those two cards in Druid lies.
So. Even Wild Growth, right? Like, they Wild Growth and they pick it up, and then let's say like Fandral, they Wild Growth on 2, they get him, coin out Raven Idol, suddenly they've drawn 2 cards, haven't really expended much, and the range of what they could have gotten from those, you know, those discoveries is actually pretty wide.
Yeah, no question.
End up in this big mystery.
Fandral's more palatable. I mean, you know what you're, you know,
sure.
You know what happens. Like, you know what the penalty is for leaving it on the board. And sometimes you have to, right? They've innervated out. There's like almost no way for you to remove it. And, but you understand that situation. But with Barnes, you have no idea what's coming out.
You know yeah. What I mean? Fandral, you can statistically play around every single choose one card because you know every single choose one card that's in the game.
Yeah, okay.
And there's not that many.
I mean, what's kind of awkward is when Barnes, you know, the so same deck runs.
So you have to play around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like what's really awkward is like when the same deck runs double teacher Fandral. They've got so many enablers for those, you know, Living Roots or Raven Idol as a way to power those up by getting a bit more mileage out of them. that it becomes difficult. Like if you play turn one and you have nothing to play, which happens in, you know, a lot of decks, and then turn two comes around, they go Innervate, Coin, Fandral. Very often their turn two, choose one is just garbage. Like there's really nothing, like they're not going to rat their own Fandral. But suddenly you can't play Totem Golem into it. Like there's a lot of things you just can't do into a Fandral that comes out early, but it always goes back to Innervate. And I feel like Innervate, of all the card slots or the mana slots that exist, really restricts the four mana slot. Like that's where I see the biggest, one of the biggest issues. Like four is just,
all right, let's
you almost can't make it super big.
Let's bring up the Druid deck, even though we're talking about Druid right now.
Sure.
And which one?
We've got,
there's a lot of them.
Okay, so we've got Noxious's Druid deck, and I think I have yours somewhere, TJ. Let me see.
Well, mine would,
it's pretty close.
Talking about the Yashash one. I think they're identical except for Yogg.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
There's double Bog Creeper.
Oh my god, literally. These guys are really similar. So they gave me their decks separately, guys.
No, I run two Mulches. You run double Fel Rage Mulch. I just don't run through.
And also you run an Azure Drake. And I don't
so the right one is TJ's. The one with the gold.
The right one is Hoy's List. It's Hoy's, identical Hoy's List.
Yeah. And the left one is Noxious List.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same for the most part.
I dig it. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess talk about Aviana and all the Bog Creepers, and why Bog Creepers over Ancient of War?
Noxious.
Noxious.
Oh no, it's just a playable card in general. Yashiraj makes it just so much better late game or early game if you Innervate, Coin, Barnes, Yashiraj, Bog Creeper. Or if you just, you know, play it naturally. Like, the things you lose for having Ancient War is nothing. Like, you never make it a 10-5 just ever.
That's
also true. With Barnes, it's just a 1-1.
It's just a 1-1 with Taunt, yeah, which either way is better than just an Ancient of War. So just I'm talking about Bog Creeper. Bog Creeper is just always better with Barnes than... the Ancient of War. It's like, what I think is interesting about Bog Creeper is just how long it took for people to start wanting to play it as a taunt minion. Because a lot of iterations of Wall Druid in the early, like after Whispers of the Old Gods came out, a lot of Wall Druid decks ran, you know, double Bog Creeper, Dark Arakoa. Some people went super all in on like Psychotron garbage.
Yeah.
And the deck just kind of died off. And then we saw Frodan playing like Bog Champ at Sea Story Cup, and people start paying attention to the card more, like at that point, start including it everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Also, Yashiraj, when it pulls out Ancient of War, is just a 5/5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a big
deal. I tried it with Ancient of Wars at first because I was like, I can't imagine Bog Creeper's better, because a 5/10 with Taunt is a little bit better than
it's
a 6/8.
Like it's one stat.
Most of the time, most of the time it is better.
Your deck runs
only
no
by
Yogg.
A little bit. My deck runs no Yogg.
Yeah, mine has Yogg. Oh, I guess Ysera got swapped out. Is that it?
Ysera? Oh, yeah.
You're running Ysera. I don't run Ysera. Okay.
Yeah, Ysera swapped out. And is that the only difference here? So for those of you listening at home, it's basically an early game built like what you would imagine a Ramp Druid to be built. It has some Feral Spirit. Actually, you have Feral Rage in yours, TJ. He doesn't.
I feel like
it's pretty tough enough to have them. Yeah, I agree.
You take so much damage early. Most of the time with Feral Rage, it either kills a Totem Golem or it heals me for 8. Like, that's it.
Yeah,
right.
That is just about it. So, I like drawing it in the late game because a lot of times you just need extra health because you take 20 damage before you can get out of big stuff, but then your big stuff just does so much work, but you're going to die to burn.
Yeah.
So you just heal for 8 with Feral Rage. I really like the Feral Rage in the deck.
Yeah, maybe I should try like cut the Drake. The number one, it also increases the value of Yashiraj, Barnes, yada yada.
That's true.
And you play like, I really like the double Mulch in that list. I find like the Feral Rage, even though it kills stuff early, you're still dead.
Mulch, I think one Feral Rage double Mulch is also fair. Yeah. I think Yogg-Saron instead of one of the big drops is fair.
That's about it though, like change wise I feel like the list is maybe not hyper refined, but
we'll see. It's pretty. And just to finish it out, guys, for those of you again listening, Karen, Emperor, Bog Creepers, Ragnaros, Aviana, Ysera, Deathwing, Yashiraj, and Yogg, if you want to add Yogg too. So sounds like a fun deck, a deck that's right up my alley too, something that's just super
it's not just fun, it's actually okay shit. Like
so it looks like it's okay too. I like Deathwing. I like
it's really tough to play. You have to do a lot of risk management in this deck because you have barely any early game. You get steamrolled. You basically hardball again for ramp every game. If you don't have wild growth, you try your best to get wild growth.
You drop so every true. Single
yeah.
thing.
Yeah, if I have like innervate, wild growth nourished, full keep, easy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of players will advocate against keeping Raven Idol if you don't have wild growth in other decks, if you don't absolutely need wild growth in the matchup. There's a lot of pro players that don't like that won't keep Raven Idol in competitive matches in Token Druid. But in this deck,
yeah,
you want it because if you get another innervate,
well, you know what you want. See, that the reason why I think the pros drop it early on is because they like to use in a situation, right? They want, like, it's kind of like tracking. You want it's most valued when you're in some kind of situation late game and you're looking for something. Where turn one, you don't have anything you're looking for outside of just value.
It is more likely though to get if you absolutely want wild growth 100% of the time, it's mm-hmm. more likely to keep Raven Idol and get wild growth
and wild growth.
Then draw wild growth from your deck because it's like 11% to get a specific card from Druid from Raven Idol, and only getting one card away is a much less percentage than 11%.
Yeah, because like the one slot that Idol takes in your hand is a lot, like it's worth more for wild growth than
translate.
You could also just draw it from your deck afterwards, which is great.
Yeah.
Translation is you get wild growth roughly 50% of the time.
Yeah, there you go.
Like yeah. So you win 50% of your games.
Yeah, exactly.
Ivory Knight gives anything can happen 100% of the time.
Oh, yeah. It seems like it when I'm playing against that deck, right? It's also, like heal for 10 and you know what's coming.
Like one thing about this type of list, like we mentioned the whole Barnes shenanigan. I've tried a similar, end game, like a lot heavier with Astral Communion, because as you mentioned, you want to just ramp up completely insanely, like as much as you can. And like it was, I think, less consistent overall than this type of list, but it's actually like on the cusp. Because of the power that the cards you have, which I thought was kind of silly. Like Astral Communion is just a bad card in general, but I feel like with Barnes you get that extra value. The fact that people are running double nourish also makes it like a tiny bit better. And in that type of list, you can actually cut the creepers, play Sol'Goth at the top end, like all the crazy stuff you would not dare include in a typical ramp. Astral Communion lets you do, which I thought was funny.
It's next level. The next level.
It's just like another ramp druid. It's like it takes two slots.
Yeah.
It just takes two slots, and you play the same strategy most of the time.
Definitely. Okay. Well, obviously a fun deck. So hopefully you guys at home checking this out. Actually, before I move on to the next deck, I just want to make sure that you guys know that we're going to be doing viewer Q&A at the end of the show. So go ahead and tweet your questions to myself at ChamMV, or you can just save your questions, I guess, for Twitch chat, and we'll take a few from there at the end. Okay. So moving on, I have an evolved. So go ahead and tweet your questions to myself at ChamMV, or you can just save your questions, I guess, for Twitch chat, and we'll take a few from there at the end. Okay, so moving on, I have an evolved deck, a Shaman evolved deck that I've been playing with the last day or two, and this deck is so fun. You know, it was fun like the first week that Evolve came out and I was playing it, but I'd forgotten how fun this deck is. And now I saw Chagi playing the Pantry Spider on the first day. I remember that. And but now getting a chance to finally do it and play Barnes too with Evolve, it's pretty awesome. And when you land the Evolves, it is disgustingly good. Just makes your day whenever you get a chance to land it.
But Chadman, what happens if you don't land the Evolves?
It's not bad too. It's the freaking Shaman. It's
then
like,
you have Pantry Spider in your deck.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, man. You got
2/1/4 for the Flame Tongue with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I only have one Pantry Spider. I don't got two Pantry Spiders. I only have one.
Okay, so I like this list. I think it needs a few revisions.
Of course it needs revision. This is for more.
Okay, well, did you just like throw this together now? Okay,
pretty
so
much,
one thing, Evolve, Sea Giant is broken in Evolve decks because you're trying to flood the board anyway.
Oh, that's true. I didn't think about Sea Giant. Yeah,
and if
true.
You Evolve a Sea Giant, it just like...
Stays.
Yeah, it's the same thing, right?
So you don't have to worry about it. It just comes back as a Sea Giant. And like it's just so good. Bloodlust is also better than Doomhammer as a win condition because usually you don't want to spend 5 mana developing a Doomhammer because that's 5 mana that could be spent on playing Pantry Spider, a one drop, and Evolve, or something along those lines. Biofit Tidehunter is so good in the deck. Finally,
That's interesting.
Aren't all those the 2/1 is a 2-drop, obviously, but the token's a 1/1, right? It's a 1-mana card, right?
It's 1-mana, yeah.
Yeah, dude, it scares me every time I have to evolve a 1-mana.
You know, like, you can't be afraid of Doomsayers. You've never shied anybody away from playing Power.
Actually, to your point, I haven't hit a Doomsayer in like the last two days of playing this deck, so.
Yeah, you know what I'd cut from this list, though? I really, like, I'm not sure if the Trogs are ever better than Argent's Choir in this deck.
Oh, I think it is. I mean, well, I play Doomhammer in this, so if you cut Doomhammer, then maybe...
I like Argent Squires better. I'm looking at my list, basically.
I play one Moat Lurker at the top end, even, dude. Like, I'd consider one Moat Lurker at the very top end.
Yeah, Brand and Master, oh my god. That would be pretty sweet.
If you're going to play Brand, then you could also play Arcanosmith.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Man, that could be
And cool. If you're going to play Brand, you could also play Gormok.
And what about the 4-mana 7/7s? Like, you cut those out, you just play, like...
4-mana 7/7?
Yeah.
Just involve your Pantry Spiders, and you get one without the overload.
I don't... Man, okay, okay. I mean, there's definitely drops. Counters... There's counter synergy with the Flame Wreaths, for sure.
They're both 3-drops. Arcanosmith is, like, a 3-drop and a 2-drop.
Yep, that's exactly... Arcanosmith is a 4-drop.
It's a 4-drop.
So 4 and a 2.
And a 0-5,
and a 2.
4 and a 2, yeah.
So it's like you get a 5 and a 3.
Yeah.
Like,
just crazy good.
When you go off on this deck, and Biofin Tidehunter is actually pretty good because you guarantee you targets for like Flame Tongue and things like that. You can play it on turn 2. There's so many times where I would coin out Pantry Spider, and then even if they kill one of your spiders, next turn you can play Biofin Evolve, and you get a 4-drop from your second spider, a 3-drop from your Biofin, and a 2-drop from the 1/1.
Okay.
And that's just 3 cards. It's such a big tempo swing.
Wow, that's pretty good.
Of course, it can backfire, but those are the types of things that you can really do.
I mean, I'd even put in Bloodlust, right?
Yeah,
that's what you talked about, instead of the Doomhammer. Yeah, I can see that.
Abusive Sergeant also ends up being great when you have lots of little tokens like that, and having more 1-drops allows you to fit in those plus evolves really quickly.
Yeah.
So there's so much work that you can do.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a lot of different things. I mean, this one was still, like, working with the whole overload and just that kind of pressure with just the Trogs and the Golems. But you're right. I mean, I think that'd be investing even more into the, just that type of archetype for Evolve. And for those of you, again, listening at home, it's a lot of different things that we've been talking about. At the end, though, the consistent part is definitely 2 things from below at the end. 2 Nerubian Prophets, because there's just so much great synergy with Master of Evolution and Evolve. And then Fire Elementals, too. Barnes is amazing with it.
See, Fire Ellies are interesting, right? I'm not even sure.
I like Fire Ellies right now.
In this deck, I'm not sure, man.
You need some gas. You need some gas. Manitides. I think Fire Elemental, I did put in my Evolve deck, which is... Mm-hmm. Top notch.
Okay, dude.
He's got like a top notch list.
He's proud, baby.
It's refined.
Is it spreading madness refined, or what level? What level of refined?
Ooh, it's beyond Yogg Zoo by a lot. I settled on 1 Fire Elemental.
Yeah,
1 Fire Elemental. Okay,
at most one of those. I'd probably play Moat Lurker instead, right?
Yeah,
but it's like you can tweak this type of list a lot.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of Maelstrom Portal? Like, I feel like I'm forcing myself to play it all the time, and it's like
you don't play Blood Mage, so it's already worse than your list.
So I just kind of force myself to play just to kind of get a better feel for it.
All right, Chain Man, this is would be the perfect time to introduce the other deck.
Okay, which one? Which one?
The Totems.
Where? I don't see it. Did you send it to me?
Yeah.
You sent it to me again. I didn't see it. You didn't send it to me.
It's in the long list of ones.
It's in the long list? I mean, I've got my own list I can give if you...
A little bit down. It's called Totems.
Oh, there's multiple. I didn't realize there are multiple ones in this. My bad. Okay, let me get this up here. Let me get this up here. Give me 1 second, guys.
All right. Prepare. So
is this your Evolve deck, or... This is a different one.
No. Okay. This is a deck that. Whew, okay.
Oh man, I'm bracing myself here.
This one is real. I think Noxious watched me play against someone who was playing this deck. This deck is legit.
All right, it's legit.
I mean, I think Wicked Witch Doctor was like the most underrated card in the set of all the reviews that I saw people. By a long shot, bro. It was unbelievable. Like, I've tried that card out when it came out, and I was so impressed with the performance of this thing.
Wow. I mean, I'll be the first to admit that I didn't really love that card. So
we got the Totemites, baby. Yes.
There are a numerous amount of players right now between, like, rank 1 and 150 legend playing this deck on both NA and E right now. If this deck gets refined, and this was just one that I threw together with inspiration from Loyan, who built a deck similar to this the other day. Also inspiration from Frodan, who played it on stream yesterday. I was driving home from King of the Hill, listening to him play it just listening to audio only on his stream. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Frodan, while streaming, had like a 75% win rate. Loyan had like over an 80% win rate. And these are across like 60 plus games for both of these guys. I played against a couple players playing it today, and it just feels so strong. The Wicked Witch Doctor works the same as like Violet Teacher. So if you play Wicked Witch Doctor, Totemic Might, you spawn the totem, and then it buffs. You play so many totems already. Your totems become so sticky, especially if you manage to get multiple healing totems.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
You spawn, what you do in this deck is you don't just barf out your cards. You don't just like play Wicked Witch Doctor on 4.
Yeah.
You have these swing turns where you'll clear the board with Lightning Storm. You'll like play Wicked Witch Doctor, clear the board with Lightning Storm, develop a totem, Primal Fusion, and just you'll swing the board. You have these big swing turns that you come back into games that you'd otherwise lose. And then you never lose the board once you take it because your totems are so strong. Like having 5 health, having 4 health totems, 6 health totems is absurd.
Yeah, the removal right now isn't like large enough to. Well, I mean, outside of maybe it's just priest, bad. I mean, there's not a lot of ways to remove, like, I guess 4 health plus totems on the board, and that's what you'd be seeing. Just for folks, again, I just want to spell this out really quick, because this is actually a very unique deck. We've got 2 Totemic Mites, a Squire, Lightning Bolt, Primal Fusions, Rockbiter Weapon, Flame Tongues, Malshan Portal, Totem Golem, Hex, Lightning Storm, Manatide Totem, Tuskar, Wicked Witch, or Wicked Witch Doctor, Azure Drake, Bloodlust, and Thunder Bluff. It's kind of finishing moves, and then things from below to finish it off. So lots of totem synergy, and this is like full out totem synergy.
I was basically running that like a very similar list, I think, on day one, except I went a little further, which might have been incorrect. It was a bit too much. When I put a Thalnos in, because I felt like it had to be a bit more mid-rangey, so I put in like Thalnos with 1 Stormcrack. But if you think that Primal Fusion all-in is just straight up better, then I mean I'm gonna have to try this out because like I feel good. Like you do starve for cards occasionally, so you probably have to run double Manatite. No, you have to run double Manatite. I imagine.
Imagine having a 5 health Manatite totem.
Yeah,
I know.
It's so hard to remove.
And no silence right now. That's like amazing.
This is a little bit of a different version. Like I said, took inspiration from a couple different players.
Sure.
But Loyan plays a version without Archon Squire. It has Tonal Trog and it has 1 copy of Feral Spirits.
Okay.
So that's sort of a similar list. This one's more, it's hard to say the differences. You can cut like a Manatide. You don't have to play Azure Drake, things like that. But I don't know which one's better. I saw Loyan played that one to much success, but I didn't like Tunnel Trog because there's not as many Overload cards. But this
I feel like in this deck Trog would be better.
I don't know, man. Squire is just no. I think Squire with Primal Fusion is just a disgusting card. Like in the mid game, and Flame Tongue is ridiculous.
But you have Lightning Bolts here too, and then you've got Totems, and you've got. I mean, you've got a lot of ways to actually get. I mean, just at least buy time or buy board with Trog.
The one card that pushes Tunnel Trog into being better, I think, is Feral Spirits, and I really didn't like Feral Spirits in the deck. And Loyan only ran when he was streaming it the other day. Only ran 1 copy. And so I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah, be able to protect.
I'm gonna have to agree with you. I think on Feral Spirit just being clunky because you have to run double Storm in that list. And the Maelstrom Portal, I guess we could debate. I just really like having 1 AoE from Maelstrom and 2 from Storms. It's just super consistent because even in those, because what this deck does is so slow at just swinging the board that you need to be able to stall a bit. And the consistency of those 3 stalls together is just over the top. Yeah. Maybe double Squire. I'm not sure. It's just, it's a really interesting list because you can tweak it like if there's like four slots that I'm happy to just tweak all the time in this one deck.
Mm-hmm. But yeah. I encourage people to give this deck a try. It's pretty tough to play. It's much tougher than regular mid-range shaman.
Yeah,
you have to really look for those swing turns. And I don't know. I said there's a lot of players. I don't know exactly what rank I am right now, but I've been playing against a lot of it today. I'm 248. I've been playing against a lot of it today.
How do you catch up? I mean, like you're talking about swing turns, right? I mean, Lightning Storm isn't that strong against the mid range.
What?
The mid range decks, though? I mean, the aggro decks is really strong, but
mid range decks, you're just going to get on the board and they're not going to be able to do anything.
Yeah, they can't even mid-range push decks off a 0/4.
You're talking about the totems and stuff. Sure.
Mid range, yeah. So decks that get off to a fast start are the ones that you need those swing turns. Right. But mid range decks will not deal with your totems.
They don't want to swing weapons into your totems. So they feel like it's dumbass when they do that.
Yeah, and you just totem pass is so strong with this deck as well. And sometimes you're just like totem pass turn one, totem pass turn two, totem pass turn three, Wicked Witch Doctor, Totemic Mind turn four. All of a sudden you have three totems that have four health and a Wicked Witch Doctor on the board that they have to remove, or you're just gonna Primal Fusion them for eight, like
that is pretty sick. That is definitely sick. So I'm gonna have to try this one out tonight.
Yeah,
this sounds awesome.
I think you'll love it. It's right up your alley. Like you keep talking about making like interesting shaman decks. This is definitely one of the more, like, people kept telling me that Wicked Witch Doctor was nothing but a Violet Teacher, and I would be inclined to agree if Totemic Might wasn't a card. Like that's the problem. When people keep telling me that, I'm like, yeah, but you have there's no card that literally reads zero mana, buff two things, possibly three, four,
that
five.
That you generate,
Like, how insane is that?
I still think Wicked Witch Doctor, I'd rather have a totem than a 1/1.
Yeah, every day. A 0/2 is so much tougher to remove.
Also, totem can also be a 1/1.
Value.
Totem can be a 1/1.
It's a 1/3 with Totemic Might.
It's just got synergy, though.
Thing from below reads, whenever you summon a totem,
win the game.
So all of a sudden, you can make even bigger swing turns because now you have Teskar Totemic. You can literally totem every turn.
Yeah.
People also sometimes forget, unless they're playing Thunderbolt Valiant, that Totem Golem is also a totem. So Totemic Might also buffs Totem Golem.
Outside of one turn, which is turn one, or even if you coin, if you have two Totem Golems, you can literally have like a solid minion to represent your
Primal
totem
Fusion
plays
and turns anything into a nightmare. Like Primal Fusion. So I think this is why Feral Spirit is so bad in the deck, is that swing turn needs to, like, you often need to have on like five or six if you want to play the Doctor. You need to have like one mana for a spell and then say Primal Fusion with Totemic Might, such that you get like this four minion board, one of which is a real minion that you actually played, which is the Witch Doctor. The rest is like leftover totems you hit up with a hero power that costs you nothing.
Yeah.
And just because of the fact that you get so many free minions, it's like you turn every matchup into a like control all your matchup where you just hit the hero power button and they can't kill everything. And you just bloodlust or valiant them down. It's ridiculously good.
Primal Fusion also, the spell registers and the totem spawns before it resolves.
Yeah, the value
so
is like,
if you Primal Fusion something, it'll actually count the totem that spawns.
Oh, you get an extra 1/1? Wow.
So you get an extra +1/+1.
Nice.
So,
that sounds pretty sweet, man. That
just
sounds
like
pretty
a 5/6
this is the
Wicked Witch Doctor.
This is definitely the deck for all the listeners and viewers to try out this week for sure. Oh, this is going to be sweet. Okay, well, thanks for bringing that, TJ. This has been a lot of fun talking.
Happy you brought it up.
Yeah,
it's cool.
Any other decks? I think that we've actually spent a lot of time talking about decks. Why don't we move on to HCT and the North American prelims that happened this past weekend? And of course, TJ worked it, and was definitely all about it. Was working the chalkboard picks a lot too. How did you end up doing? Actually, I forget who your picks were. I don't think anybody did well, right?
I picked Frozen and Vanquisher.
Yep. Oh, okay. Okay.
Vanquisher was my... I always pick one pick that I actually like know is going to do reasonably well.
Mm-hmm.
Like based Frozen. Just off statistics, which was Frozen. And then one which is sort of like a pick that is a player that I follow or am friends with or Noel that has been having a lot of success recently that is feeling good going into the tournament. That's just like a pick that if you get it right, you look like a genius.
Yeah.
Like I totally knew this guy was going to win.
Exactly. A lot of people do the same things. Kibler's one of the ones that doesn't. Because
who do you Kibler, think? He's like 6-0.
He can't be right.
No, last week he was 6-0. Last week, I know that.
Kibler could write like poop on the board twice, and people would still be like, Kibler's a genius.
Exactly. How did he know?
But it's, so I didn't get it this time. And
well, I don't think anybody got any of them, did they?
No, for both EU and NA, yeah, nobody got them. Nobody but got for NA, it was a little bit better because Rosti and Yo It's Flow were still on the board and they made 9th through 12th.
Yeah.
Muzzy wasn't on the board, no. But yeah, it was pretty bad for the casters. Yeah. Oh, I mean, everybody picked Teray except me. I picked Disgustos and Crypt.
Disgustos and Crypt. That's pretty ballsy.
Just to kind of run through the top eight, it ended up being a dude 7597, which those of you wondering about the numbers, it's his birthday, right? Hot Meow. How do you pronounce that? Hot
Meowth?
Meowth. Yeah.
It's a Pokemon. Pokemon.
Oh, dude. Gosh. That's right. Dude, I'm just... My son's more into Pokemon than I am. So.
Oh, I see.
Teray. That's disappointing. Yeah. Teray. Top of Pablo 11. Roof Trellin, which had the best reactions of the tournament whenever he won. And Pascoa, Monsanto, and Abar. So yep. Congratulations to those guys. But yeah, Roof Trellin, man, definitely my favorite character from the from the tournament, with the way he was reacting to victories or awesome draws. Those are always great to see. What'd you guys think of the decks that people were running? Any trends that you saw that worth noting?
I mean, trends we didn't expect. I'm happy that Freeze Mage showed up a little bit and some anything can happen. Trend wise, like, I'm not sure if there's anything like out of the ordinary.
I really liked how a lot of players didn't try and beat the best decks, but tried to make strategies that were just as powerful as bringing the best decks. And I just want to clarify, by best decks, I mean Aggro Shaman, Zoo Warlock, Dragon Warrior, and Yogg Druid or Token Druid. Those are the, widely regarded as the four decks that are strongest in Conquest at the moment.
Right.
I'm thinking about players like Chalky, who ended up bringing like Rogue, Tempo Mage.
Rogue was an interesting pick, definitely.
Yeah,
this week.
And so players that bring the Dragon Warrior variant effectively just ban Warrior all the time, and that's a good strategy. And what the Rogue slash Temple Mage slash I can't even remember what the other decks were. It was Rogue, Temple Mage, Aggro Shaman
wasn't there,
and Control Warrior.
Oh, yeah. Control Warrior.
I know there was an Aggro Sham.
Cycle Cthune there. Control Warrior. And what this did was, it didn't try and beat the best decks. It tried to do what they did, and that was like beat up on most decks, but also have really good matchups against Druid. And so what they would do is they would beat alternative deck styles. So they would beat the greedy control lists that tried to beat the best decks, like the Murloc Paladins and the Freeze Mages, which a lot of people ended up bringing, because you just roll over those with Aggro Shaman, with Temple Mage, with Rogue. Those all beat those greedy control decks as well as the four best decks. But they also targeted Druid, because Rogue, Temple Mage, Aggro Shaman are also all good against Druid.
Right.
So it wasn't a strategy to counter the meta. It was a strategy to both counter the meta as well as counter the people that
the
were people countering.
And the counter, counter the counter meta too.
So
it was
next level. And there was a lot of players that had success bringing that exact style. And Yo It's Flow was one of them. He almost made it. Chalky was one of them. That whole sort of practice group. Muzzy was also one of them, but he didn't settle on... He settled on Reno Lock instead of like Rogue, which sort of does the same thing. It beats up on control decks. It beats up on Warriors. That lineup bans Shaman almost exclusively if they're playing aggro. Even if they're playing Conceit Shaman or Bog Creeper Shaman.
Yeah, still
so
good.
that strategy was really cool to me. And...
They had a lot of success too. I mean, it was definitely a good strategy, and I know Chalky just had a few few kind of crazy moments, at least with his rogue, that ended up costing him. He had that one good match with the rogue that had a very, yeah, very poor RNG.
Shit happens, dude.
Yeah, but that basically cost him. He couldn't win any of the other matches with that rogue, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So what did you guys think about, what would you say was the deck of the weekend? You know, the deck that was performed with.
Anything can happen paladin, like the hybrid was pretty cool to see, but
so that cool was, to see, but didn't
that
really
was
have
super
much
strong
success
last week. Yeah. So that was interesting because, you know, the 6-0 obviously had a lot of success with that, I believe, the previous week, right? So a lot of people knew about that deck this time around. How many times did we actually see that variant of it? I mean, I definitely saw
once
anything's just
we
once,
saw it from Roof. I think,
oh, here we go. Yeah, we saw it from Roof Challenger.
Roof played no Murlocs, and yeah, Hot Meowth played no Nuzoth.
Yeah, so we didn't actually see the both.
Roof had
no, the one that came up with the hybrid was like, I think it failed. The one that like tried to mix both styles.
Mm-hmm. That one's just trying to do too much stuff.
Yeah,
I think
trying to do too much stuff at once.
Even Hot Meowth's paladin deck didn't perform that well. He would just steamroll with his first two decks and give himself three chances to win with yeah, with Murloc paladin and barely scrape by. So I wonder how he actually had two or three broadcasted matches, and that was the case in all of them.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get a chance to ask him how his Murloc paladin performed in non-stream matches, but I can't imagine it did exceptionally well. He made it pretty far through the winner's bracket, so he only had to win 5 total matches. So, and we watched 2 of those that he won.
Right.
So, can't have been that good.
Yeah. It seemed like everybody was banning Warrior for the most part, though. Maybe except for that group that you were talking about. I think you might have read out the statistics for it at one point during the broadcast, and it was... Was it something like 500 and something bans or something? I forget what it was. It was yeah, something ridiculous versus 100.
It was ridiculous.
Versus
Shaman
100.
And Warrior.
Yeah. And
Shaman and Warrior.
Yeah. It's crazy. Anything else? Obviously, you know, some of the key moments in the thing was obviously the Yogs are on. Everybody was talking about, right? That happened to Dude. And
wait, which one?
I know, yeah, which one, right? Like, it happened several times.
Like 75,000 of them, but yeah.
The dude one
was
a
5-spell
Yogg. Probably the yep, best 5-spell Yogg that I've ever seen.
On a
seen
full board, right? From Zoo. Board. Yeah, which is...
I'm actually...
Just gotta get right.
Yeah, I'm really good friends with Muzzy, who Dude beat in the lower bracket match to qualify.
Yep.
And even in that matchup, I didn't know who to root for because I wanted Dude to win so bad because of, like, justice against Yogg-Sarons everywhere, you know, being defeated by Yogg-Saron and then coming back and winning, so... That was a tough match to watch. That one where Dude got yogged.
I mean, like, from a caster perspective over there, like, you have to spin it as though it's like a calculated risk. Like, I don't really know how people pull it off. Like, you know, the Froden incident when Karazhan reveal is like, "Yep, I do love to make my minions worse." I feel like that's just the way I'd go about it.
Calculated risk is it's not.
It's well, not no, a calculated risk.
It's not.
That's the way it's spinned, like by when you're casting, which is really tough.
I mean, what's the risk? You usually play when you're behind. So
I'm not saying it's calculated risk.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
don't misquote me. I don't think it is.
Yeah.
I'm agreeing. It's not. The thing is, and Caster said a lot. You probably heard us say it many times throughout the weekend. You get behind in the early game, and you say, "Okay, this is the Yogg game."
Yep.
Yep.
It's not a risk.
Gotta go all in on
it's
this.
a comeback condition, a win condition. And
at any point in the game, it's a win condition.
But this is a big thing, a big debate that's going on, and it's kind of one sided. But since I am a broadcaster, and I am primarily doing, I only do competitive matches. Really, mm-hmm. I don't do personal streams because I'm too busy with broadcasting, like competitive stuff. Even from a competitive standpoint, I understand why Yogg is probably not going to be banned or it's not going to you know, be rotated out early or things like that. It is fun. It is fun to watch. It is exciting. It's fun to play. It's not fun to be on the other end of it, but there's a lot of cards that aren't like that. People can complain about the randomness of Yogg, but there's so much randomness in Hearthstone. Every card you draw from your deck is random, even though that one has more control. Over the course of the game, with which draws you get, with you know, cards that have random effects attached to them. You're going to get as much random effects as Yogg, just Yogg throws it into one package and shoves it in your face. And so that's why people look at that and they think, but I think that other things, like one of the games that Teray played against Chalky got unlucky so many times in a row. Mm-hmm. And I think that that game was worse
to watch. Yeah, I agree with you.
From watching that standpoint, than that Yogg game of Dude. And there was no other random, there was very little random effects that were involved that people complain about in the Chalky Teray game than there was in the Dude game. So I don't know. I think that Yogg is problematic, but is it going to go away? I don't think so. I don't know.
I don't think it will. I think like for a little while too, I think Yogg was one of the few things that made Hearthstone enjoyable, like before Karazhan came out. Because there was like this try time where the metagame was, I wouldn't say figured out, because that would be a big stretch. Given more time, it might have shifted more. But it was just kind of dry. Like, we'd seen enough Dragon Warrior on Zoo on Shaman. Like, it was just kind of getting stale. And you know, the occasional druid that played the Yogg was pretty interesting.
It was hipster to play Yogg, you know, and because we were seeing mostly with Mage to begin with, and then Jackie came out with his druid, and that's when we started seeing it, you know, played more on the ladder. And then now, like, I mean, look at all these decks we have, or these lists we have. I think how many players? Let's see, maybe five or six out of the eight players had at least one Yogg.
One Yogg deck, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's...
I mean, the thing is, there's a dozen thousand... Like, there's a million ways in which Yogg can do things. It's just flashier. Because you see the sequence of spells, and, you know, it feels like they are meaningful. But in truth, if you could boil it down to probability, and just not even see the train to the wreck, if you just saw the wreck at the very end, then, you know, it's less aggravating, I guess.
Well, it's one of these things where I think a lot of people on Reddit have done the calculations, and you know, the community at this point knows that Yogg, more so than not, will be beneficial to the person that casts it. And if you're looking at it from a high level standpoint, then if you're playing against a Yogg deck, you should take that into account. You know, just like you take into account any kind of board removal.
Well, how do you take it into account?
I know, but I'm just saying, like, if you just think of it in terms of like, not investing too much into the board. You know, that sort of thing. You know, like what you can lose.
Yeah, you
know
what I mean? You can play around Yogg. I just want to clarify that I'm not defending Yogg.
Oh no. In a sense. I mean, I wasn't necessarily defending it either. I was about to just like the counterpoint, saying that.
Yeah. I glance at chat, and some people think I'm defending Yogg in a better sense. I honestly believe, and I think that competitive Hearthstone would be a little bit better without Yogg than it would be with Yogg. I don't think it's as problematic as some people think it is, but I do think that maybe third party organizers should start banning Yogg and pressuring Blizzard to do it.
Yeah, ban lists are something Blizzard hasn't liked very much. We had like a some interesting bans early in Hearthstone's life with like little tournaments that we ran, but
we have not seen an event that literally bans like a few cards versus, you know, have some thematic thing. Like we saw a Challenge Stone, right? That's probably the closest thing that we've had, like a subset of cards being played, but actually having like a normal tournament with one card ban, I don't think we've ever seen that in Hearthstone.
The thing is, I Yogg is fun to watch, like we said, but maybe not at the highest level competitive play. You don't want to see Yogg decide a game at the World Championship. You don't want to see Yogg decide a game to see who goes to the top eight at America's Championship, which happened twice over the course of HCT, this last thing. That's the difference of at least $2,500 decided by that game. That's the difference between 9th through 12th and 5th through 8th. It's $2,500, I'm pretty sure. And so it's a little bit weird. Maybe some changes, maybe not remove it from the game.
You're being so diplomatic right now, man. This is like, this is so funny.
Well, more or less, cause like we've agreed that Yogg is like, it's a bullshit way to win because but it's mostly because it's like a hopeless scenario. When I look at the cost of Twisting Nether and I look at the cost of Yogg, I just have to wonder, Well, I agree, they're not the same, and they're not the same.
But it's not just that, right? There's other things involved too.
I have a proposition, and this all this credit goes to, or at least the credit from who I heard it from, goes to Sottl, one of a good friend of mine who, of course, you guys know from catching HGT.
Sure.
What if Yogg was limited to only casting spells that filled up as much mana as you spent on spells throughout the game?
Sure.
It is a little more complex, but Yogg is already sort of a complex card. It's already some people might look at it and say it's a little bit hard to understand, especially some of the French case scenarios, like do Yogg spells count as your own for other things?
Probably not.
Like, say you cast 16 mana worth of spells throughout the game. You play Yogg-Saron, Yogg-Saron will cast random spells until he's filled up 16 mana.
Okay, so like I could see how that works. Like, if you want to play the double Pyroblast, double Mind Control type decks, then suddenly you want to play Yogg for fun on top of that crap. I'm not saying it's good. It's just like for the casual players, that's where they'd go. You know, the ones that play Purify. Whereas the competitive players would not get like Twisting Nethered into double Call of the Wild. It just almost couldn't happen, especially with Innervades being around and Idols.
You'd be more easily able to calculate odds, even though it'd still be pretty abysmal odds.
Yeah,
for
but
me to like, calculate. You'd well, still be more easily able to do it.
So yeah, what happens if like he Innervates into Totemic Might into Innervate into Totemic Might into Innervate? Because like that costs nothing, right?
Costs nothing.
That's why Yogg wouldn't cast nothing. Or he would only cast zero mana. So there are zero mana.
He would cast zero spells forever. Like, that
I know, that's what's weird too, right? So there's definitely a gotcha scenario there where there are just a bunch of zero mana spells. Yeah. So I don't know. I think when you're at that point.
I just like the idea.
I mean, it's an interesting idea where the mana bank concept, but in the end, I think you might as well just choose an X number of spells and figure out what that is mathematically. That's reasonable, you know, because as you cast more and more spells, we all know that there's more and more chance that something, the overall result will be beneficial to the person that plays Yogg. And if we can just find whatever that number is it 3 spells? Is it 4 spells? I don't know what it is, but I think it would be, if we ended up changing the card to be that, then it could be acceptable, I think, in pro play. Right now, it's you say it's fun to watch, but it's not so fun to watch anymore after we've seen it like a lot of times. You know, it really isn't, you know, so.
I have one more thing, possible suggestion for Yogg-Saron.
Okay.
And the third solution, before I get to second solution, is to ban it from competitive play. But let me go to second solution.
Okay. Right.
Actually, yeah. So second solution, what if it was like a Draxxus effect where
you became Yogg-Saron?
You became Yogg-Saron, set your health to a certain amount.
Okay. Yeah,
and then casted all the random spells.
So it's actually, so you're like at 10 health and you rip in pieces.
More like
so one, you don't have a 7/5 on board.
Yeah.
Two, you can't play it when you're like, if you play it when you're healthy, you'll just, you know, get rid of all your health to try and like come back on a board if you don't have any cards left. Three, you're more likely to kill yourself, much more likely to kill yourself. So it's a very high risk card. It becomes like a better Major Domo, in a sense, I guess.
Man, I don't even know if it is or not, actually. 5 health? Wow.
Well, 5 health, it could raise the health a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, 5 health is really low. Major Domo is
It could make Yogg like a 7/7 and give you like a 7 health count or whatever.
And your hero power, you'd lose your hero power would become cast a random spell for 2 mana.
So like, because we talked about like ways to fix Yogg. I think that one is really, really elegant in the way that it's still super pleasing aesthetically, just in every way. But it's also a lot higher risk because you can't just win and be safe on the following turn more often than not. But like one of the things that was suggested is just to cut out Yogg from competitive play entirely is to simply make it so both players cast spells instead of just you. So you would cast 10 spells, your opponent would cast 10. And in the end, like, you know,
wow.
No, but the point is you wouldn't, like, the odds of you actually racing ahead are pretty slim at that point.
Yeah, I mean, 10 spells are casted from each side. In theory, it should be equal.
It's just a null.
Yeah,
it's a null.
It should be equal. It's just that would take a long time. The animation for all that would be... It'd definitely be your turn, or pretty close to your turn, if you're talking about 10-plus spells. They might have to increase the speed of all the spells, but... I don't know. I don't love that one either, to be honest. It's just like, we're just casting a bunch of spells, you know, all at once, and it's just kind of... It's just this maelstrom, basically.
But again... I don't really know if they're going to change any cards because then they have to ban it for formats and reprint it again.
Yeah, it's really tough.
I keep forgetting.
Like, how are you going to play modern without
digital? Oh, man.
So it's got to become a meme at some point. Like, at some point, that needs to stick as like an actual three-word catchy meme.
Yeah,
like we need to find one for that. I don't know. I can't even believe the amount of changes we've seen. And like, I understand why they're pacing those. Like, I get it. But ultimately... I feel like a casual player will enjoy Yogg even if it's not playable competitively. Like, if the goal of pure, if they justify printing shit like Purify because the casual player likes to play Ancient Watchers and blah, 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 then surely making Yogg worse, like Domo, is fine. Even if it stays, if it becomes bad for people to play with at high level.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I think it's best in that bucket. Unfortunately, I don't think they will. Well, not only will they just not change it generally, they particularly won't change it when we were having even more influx with the meta, with new cards and stuff. So I will see it at BlizzCon. I'm almost I would bet a lot of money that we see it at BlizzCon, just because, again, like it's going to be hard for them to even measure.
I don't know, because there was... Okay.
Inside information here.
No. This is not inside information. This is based off of history. They don't tell me anything. me anything.
All right.
Yeah. I'm not Froden yet.
He's working on it.
But yeah, last year they changed a problematic card right before BlizzCon.
Yeah.
They changed a problematic card that was played in a very powerful deck right before BlizzCon. So, I'm just saying, don't rule it out that they're not going to take feedback and maybe make changes. I wouldn't expect them to be like sweeping changes because I don't know. They tend to not make sweeping changes very often, but they did with Warsong Commander. They effectively removed it from the game because they weren't sure what it was going to go. Of course, Warsong Commander, they talked about how it wasn't generally because it was strong in Patron. They talked about how it was mainly because it limited their design space to make charge minions in the future, or it limited their design to make minions that were low attack stuff, like Dread Steed or something.
Yeah,
but exactly. Yogg-Saron, I feel like, even though it's a lot different of a case, it still serves a similar purpose in where, it's going to limit design space because you're going to think, well, if we print the spell,
Yogg just gets cast better.
It just gets cast by anybody. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, to your point, they do have some record of doing so. But I'm just kind of looking at, okay, so we still got a week. So we got this week coming up for Wing 3, and then we got another wing after that. And we've got 2 or 3 weeks still left in releasing the expansion. And you got to think that, you know, the month's time is probably not enough data, and that actually pushes through, you know, just the actual qualifications, you know, who actually goes to BlizzCon. And so it would have to happen in the next month. And I just don't see that happening, or at the end of next month. And I don't know. I'd be really surprised.
It was a week before the final championships, right?
Which is what? That's like the beginning of October, right? Like
that last year, that was beginning of October last year. That's what it was. I can't remember the exact date. It might be like the end of September that it was changed, but it definitely had a lot of effect. And people, I don't know. There's that opens up another debate of should they change things more often? Should they change things before tournaments more often? Because, you know, the best players will be the ones that are the best at innovating and deck building right when changes come out.
Yeah.
Which is why championships are going to be interesting. Osaka won with post nerf patron warrior in his lineup, and that was when he didn't really have much time because players for BlizzCon submit deck lists pretty far in advance. It's actually 3 weeks before.
This is kind of why we had no Karazhan.
Because of opening week.
Yeah.
Because they have to submit it a week before opening week begins. And opening week begins the Thursday, the weekend before BlizzCon happens.
Yeah.
So it's like 2.5 weeks in advance decklists are due for BlizzCon. So he didn't have much time to experiment.
And we all know the meta changes, like definitely in 2 weeks' time. So that's not ideal, but I can understand why they did it, obviously. So I guess we'll have to see, you know, just with Yogg. It's an ongoing question. I mean, it's going to keep coming up, and we're going to keep seeing more and more of it. We'll have to see if it gets to the point where Blizzard does have to do something about it. All right, well, let's do some viewer Q&A. Sound good, guys?
Let's see
what we got here. So we did have a question. Like, the first question that I read to you, like, when we were getting set up here, was CJ Bennett from Twitter. Oh, by the way, guys, if you want to ask your question, go ahead and tweet to me at ChamMV, and I'll read out the questions. If we run out of questions on Twitter, I'll go to Twitch and we'll Twitch chat and we'll read one from there. So, also, I want to give a shout out to some of the patrons too. I always forget to do it during the show, and not at the end of the show. We do have a patron for ValueTown. If you want to support the show, it's patreon.com/ValueTown. And I want to give a shout out to a few of our patrons. It's kind of what we do each week. Devin Westfall, Cameron McMillan, Jacob Perez, David Thomas, and Eric Hobb, thank you so much for supporting the show. And we're going to start incorporating some of the patrons and subs in the deck tech, and just maybe taking a look at one of the decks each week very, very soon. Nice. Yeah, it's going to be really fun. All right, so let's take a question here from CJ Bennett. Who is your favorite caster that is not Frodan or yourself? I guess that's to at least you two. I don't cast any. cast anything, so you guys.
Come on, Jim.
It's been a long time.
I say Shocky. Like, Shocky definitely is up there. Like, Firebat's got a lot of recognition recently, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think Shocky's kind of a guy we don't see enough, yet he's just really good. At least I like the way he casts, personally.
Okay, so Shocky. How about you, TJ?
That's a tough one. That is a really tough one.
I mean, there's different roles too. You know, like every
people that I enjoy casting with the most. There's people that I think I work the best with, and there's people that I enjoy talking with outside of casting.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they all fit different categories. That's not Frodan. Okay, Chucky is probably the most fun to cast with.
I'm sure
if you like to meme.
You like to meme. We all like to meme.
Admirable is he's sort of polarizing to some people, but I really think Admirable's a great caster who's worked pretty hard over the past couple months, and I think me and him do great together because we cast together so often.
Yeah, you do.
But I think all around my favorite caster besides Frodan or myself would probably be Sottle. Sottle just does like just everything well, I think. For a while, people thought Sottle was just like this cynical guy who lived in cold, dark England. But I think he's really has a unique casting style, and he does just about a lot of things well. And I got to cast with him for like the first time in forever over the past in the past weekend. We casted like twice over HGT, and we had to cast through like the worst technical issues you could possibly imagine. We started a match, and then that match, they had internet issues at the venue, so we had to fill for like 30 minutes. And then they started a new match, and we got all the way to game 5, and then we had technical issues again and had to fill for another 15 minutes until they finally swapped us out. And those are the times when casters get tested the hardest, when they have to talk stone for an amount of time that is not defined, when nobody's telling you, hey, you guys, fill for 5 more minutes. They're like, we don't know. Fill just until stop. We tell you to stop.
Exactly.
Good luck. Yeah.
So, and Sado and I, I actually enjoyed the conversations that we had, and that's rare when you have to fill like that. So, I'll say Sado.
Gosh, for me, that's a tough question. It might be, I mean, it's just mostly just style-wise. I think it is Firebat, actually. I like Killer 2, but I think Firebat is probably just the one that I prefer the most, just because it has a little bit to do with just because I know him so well. And everything he says is just, you know, a lot of times sometimes I don't see, you know, some of the comments that he makes that are very enlightening to me. So at least recently, it's been Firebat. All right, next up. It's the Iger Ost. Do you think the curator will see play in Milrogue? Of course, in some way, right?
Oh my god.
It's got to be in some way.
What beast are you going to play in Milrogue?
I don't know what beast, but, you know, just the Oracle for sure.
What dragon are you going to play in?
Mukla. You play Mukla.
Yeah, Mukla. There you go.
There, the six drop.
That's right. That's right. Mukla.
What dragon?
I'm trying to push it, dude. I'm trying to push.
Oh, what you can dragon? Play either. You can play both Muklas. You can play both Muklas.
Play Drake, and you play Malagos to the top end, so you can play a Malagos Miracle.
Malagos?
You use the bananas use the bananas to draw, use Cold Light to cycle, and yeah, I mean, shit, we've got this nailed down. This deck's like top tier, tier one, tier zero rogue, dude. It just wrecks everything.
I think 7 mana is too expensive for Milrogue. I think Milrogue on 7 mana needs to be doing a lot more than putting 3 cards in their hand and passing.
They need to shove your entire hand, like your board, into your hand and then play something.
You're already going to have like 6 Cold Light Orals in your deck. You're already going to draw probably 3 a turn anyway. You don't for 7 mana.
Yeah.
The idea seems creative, but I think Curator has a lot more place. In other places.
Oh man. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cool idea. It's a cool idea.
Dude, we got a lot of questions here. All right, we got some questions from some friends here too. But let's see. Another one here is from Georgie Barrios. Ask TJ if he prefers casting or playing competitive Hearthstone.
Whew. This question. Okay.
It's a $1 million question. It's like asking.
People might be surprised by my answer. Might be a surprise on my answer. I highly prefer playing.
Yep.
But that doesn't
surprise me.
But playing is tough, man. Playing Hearthstone competitively it stresses you out beyond belief because there are so many things that are outside of your control. You're not gonna. It's not like CS:GO. You're not just gonna like flick shot somebody and just clutch it, you know, and just win the game and just go on pure adrenaline. Adrenaline is bad in Hearthstone because it forces you to like, it clutters your brain. It forces you to play off of instinct, and sometimes that's not good. You know, you have to think through your plays and actually think critically for a very long time, especially in a tournament when sometimes you either play 5 matches in a row or you play a match, wait 7 hours, and then play a match. It's exhausting. But don't get me wrong, I love casting, and people that have followed me for a long time. It's not very many people, but I casted for so long before I ever did anything relevant. Because I did it for very little money for a long time because I loved it. And I eventually got good at the game. And so I love casting. It's higher. It's on average more money than playing by a very wide margin.
By a lot.
Because most players don't make any money. But playing, there's just something about playing that's just special. You know, playing in a tournament, I've only played in a few.
Yeah.
And I've actually done really well in a couple OBA tournaments, which are the ones that I like to play in the most because those are relaxed. You're at home. You can just play a tournament and be done with it.
Yeah.
You're not on camera. There's not people watching
those
you.
Those are the best kind, where you just in the comfort of your house and
good stuff. It's incredible. Playing in a tournament and having people, you know, watch you make plays as bad as you might play. But yeah, I'd say playing.
All right. Well, speaking of Soddle, so he has my question for you, TJ. On the scale of 1 to Pantry Spider, how broken is Pantry Spider?
Oh my god.
Dude, I love the card, but yeah. God. But TJ just doesn't.
I'm pretty sure I asked Soddle that question. Like, I'm pretty sure.
Oh man, he's totally plagiarizing you, man.
I'm pretty sure I like stormed into the HTT green room at like European prelims when Pantry Spider first came out, and I just like pushed Soddle on the chest, and I asked him that question.
You're like pulling an admirable there, breaking in there.
Yeah, Pantry Spider sucks, man.
Pantry Spider is broken.
Yeah, exactly.
I had just played Evolve deck, and I was like high on the Pantry Spider endorphins, And
I like that, the way you're phrasing it. The pantry spider and dwarfins.
Exactly. There's something about evolving a pantry. Like,
it's good. It's definitely good stuff, man, for sure.
This is not what Charles Star went into.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, dude, like, two 4-mana 7/7s out of one card.
Oh, yeah.
Just putting it out there, you know?
All right, so Bonnie asks, Pedro Bonnie, do you think Arcane Giant is a good choice for Freeze Mage? Yeah, a lot of people were talking about Giants. I haven't tried it yet in Freeze Mage. I've tried it in all kinds of decks, but not Freeze Mage yet.
Any of you guys? Okay. Like, the Freeze is, it's like playing Echo Mage in a way, like the way you win with this. It feels like you win like Echo.
Yeah, kind of. Definitely very similar, at least that turn. Because you get pretty low. You have to spend a lot of spells for it to actually be that magical 0-mana turn.
Freeze Mage is probably the only deck in the game where I wouldn't want a free 8/8.
8/8, yeah, probably. It's like, it's just, I don't think it's a win condition that's better than spells, because you just always set up for the following turn, and that just doesn't do it well.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, remember you, back in the day when we had Freeze Mage Giants, Moltons, and back in the day?
Yeah, I remember that, but that was, I don't think it was Freeze as much as Echo.
The Freeze Mage list is really tight right now. Mm-hmm. Especially since Mad Scientist, especially since Mad Scientist is gone, you can't really afford to not have enough cycle.
Yeah,
and you can't really afford to miss turns. Freeze Mage is such a cheap deck. It's a very low mana cost on average deck. Most of your stuff's like two mana. And if you draw an Arcane Giant early, which is pretty likely. You might just lose.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and you've got two in the deck. You might just get run over, and you can't miss turns as Free Mage. Every single turn matters. You see people go to great lengths to buy themselves one more draw. Mm-hmm. You know, they use Ice Lance, which is a burn in their deck, to buy themselves a turn. Arcane Giant, probably not buying you a turn, especially early on in the game, and that's where those turns matter. Mm-hmm. So, no, I don't know.
Maybe if you give me back Echo, then maybe we can talk about like an interesting
Give me Blood Warrior.
not even Blood Warriors, man.
Yeah, Blood Warrior.
It's not Freeze Mage.
Yeah,
it's
another
Echo
deck.
Mage. Yeah. Yeah, it's a different deck.
There you go. Okay, last thing. So this question's kind of, we kind of answered a little bit with Beast Druid, but he does have a follow-up. So Fresh 802 asks, what is the expected viability of Beast Druid upon the new wing release? Is Dragon Warrior still simply superior for what it does? So I guess we're talking about mid-range decks. You know, like, Dragon Warrior has been the epitome of mid-range decks for months now, and it is the measuring stick. Whenever we're trying to introduce new mid-range decks, particularly in the dragon space, I mean in the warrior space, I don't think there is anything that's even close at this point. You know, do people run the Beast Druid deck over the Dragon Warrior deck if they're building a 3-deck lineup or 4-deck lineup?
Depends. I think Hunter is going to be the determining factor in whether or not that gets played. Like, how much I think that Hunter's more, Hunter? I think, of the direct competitor.
Okay.
Right now than...
Oh, you mean to the Dragon Warrior, you mean?
Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong, but, you know.
I mean...
I think so.
You think so?
They do similar things. Why would you bring Beast Druid to trying to punish greedy control decks?
Yeah, we talked
Beast
about
Druid
it.
Beast Druid doesn't have, board control elements. So you're going to get run over by Zoo Warlocks a lot of the time, unless you get a really great start.
Yeah.
A lot of times you're going to get run over by Aggro Shaman, things like that, unless you can get those overstated things early on. But, they kind of feel a similar board as Hunter, where you're trying to punish those greedy control decks. But Hunter's getting a lot of tools, and I don't know if Menagerie Warden's going to be enough. We'll have to see. I mean, like I said, I said earlier, Rosti had success at any prelims with Beast Druid without Menagerie Warden.
That's
and a
crazy.
Beast Druid list that I don't think was as refined as it could be, especially with Menagerie Warden being in the card pool. So I think it'll be a tier 2 deck.
Yeah, I mean, just because he had a lot of success with it doesn't necessarily mean it's better than Dragon Warrior. I mean, his Dragon Warrior, did he have Dragon Warrior? He probably had Dragon Warrior, and it was probably banned a ton too. So I think measuring it up against those two, I'm still not sure. I still think Dragon Warrior's going to be better for a while. Beast Druid, with the success they've had, it's still been way behind. You know, it's like Menagerie is going to catch them up, and you know, not, I don't think it's going to necessarily put them over the top, given how much of a deficit that they already had in terms of power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, can I ask a question?
Of course. Go. Of course. Yeah. We're going to, this last question, we're going to wrap up after this.
Okay. We didn't talk about Kindly Grandmother.
Oh, yes. Yeah. You wanted to talk about
Kindly Grandmother. And I wanted to talk about Kindly Grandmother.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Let's. I want Noxious to talk about it first.
And then sure.
Okay. What do you think of Kindly Grandmother, Noxious? At this, pretend I'm tweeting. Hello, Noxious. At Noxious.
What is this?
Cool, I think Noxious. This card's the best 100 card in the set. Role
playing now? Okay. Here we go.
It's the best 102 drop of all time, besides Scientist. There we go.
Okay.
All right. Yeah. That's fair. That's all it's said about it?
I don't like Kindly Grandmother.
Okay. Explain, TJ. Elaborate, yeah, baby.
End the show.
Can I get a look at this?
And you're the guy who likes to, you like to run double Huntmaster, right?
Okay. All right. So I played it in my list. We showed a list. I don't know if we showed it earlier, but we might have showed it.
I don't think we did. I can pull it up.
Played a list earlier with Kindly Grandmother. Kindly Grandmother has not performed well for me. Kindly Grandmother has been one of my lowest win rate cards in my Hunter deck.
Jesus.
The only two other cards. When played, that gave me a lower win rate in the hunter deck earlier were like Snake Trap and Unleash the Hounds, and that was like it.
I guess Zoo's not around, right? So
yeah, there is still a bit of Zoo, but when people realize that Snake Trap, they're just gonna ignore it. And Kindly Grandmother is too slow. I feel like Kindly Grandmother is I'd almost always rather have a huge toad.
I think you play both in the same deck, though, right?
Yeah, you play both.
Four two drops, and these are the four I choose.
I mean,
sometimes I feel like I'd rather have a King's Elk. I'd rather have a than have a 1/1 and a 3/2. Like, everything that a 3/2 trades into, it feels like Kindly Grandmother also trades into. You just do it a turn later, so you take more damage.
You definitely do take. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, Hunter not having heal and taking damage early is really, really bad.
Yeah, and you end up losing races, and you end up playing. You end up, like, look at the popular decks right now. Druid is maybe the only one where it might be a little bit better, but even then, I don't even know, because what if you play a Kindly Grandmother and then they innervate out a threat? You have a 1/1 on the board. Like, what are you gonna do to kill that? You can't even Houndmaster it up to kill a Violet Teacher right away. You can't. I mean, yeah, you can still kill Command, but you'd be able to do it with a 3/2 anyway and push three damage right away.
Yeah, and start like putting on the pressure instead of trying to just live until Call of the Wild. You beat them before or with it.
Yeah, it's strictly a value card. Okay. And right now the meta is not a value meta. You're not going
Totem Shaman. Just wait.
Well, I think it relies heavily on the Houndmaster play. So, like, if you don't have the Houndmaster play at all, then yeah, you fall behind and you lose races like probably easily. But if you can land the Houndmaster on either the Grandmother or the Big Bad Wolf, then you're probably in good position as a hunter.
Yeah, I'm still playing it. I still think it's a card that makes the cut for the deck. Because there's not a good enough two drops yet, but I still think that it's not the most broken two drop that we've seen. Because at least for the current meta, if the meta switches and we get more towards a value oriented game, and we get more towards, you know, control decks ruling all and value style control decks ruling all, which it might be after Karazhan's release, then it's going to be great. But right now, it feels like you can't afford to not have a powerful play on turn two as a hunter when the meta is filled with aggressive shamans, when the meta is filled with Zulocs and druids who innervate things out, and dragon warriors who, so what if they play?
I think you're missing Abusive.
Yeah, Abusive is, I think, the one.
I think you're missing Abusive from this list. Because, like, I run it in my deck. You don't like having, you know, 4/1 drops. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned earlier, you're doubling up on Houndmaster and one Wolf. I think, like, double Abusive and Hunter is still really good.
But then if you play Abusives, you have to play Argent Squires.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't have to.
It's better to have
them. No, you can go double Abusive because Grandmother's there.
But then your deck sort of loses some of its... It loses its mid-game. And where do you make cuts? You make cuts with secrets, but if you don't have secrets, then I feel like the deck sometimes weaker. I mean, then you're not playing Cloaked Huntress, then you're streamlining the build, and then you might as well just be an aggressive hunter.
Like full aggro.
Then you're not going to capitalize on the control decks as much because I don't know. But like I wish I could pull up my stats and show, but maybe I'll tweet them out later. Because I made most of my push to Legend this season with a deck that had kind of Grandmasters, the deck that I played the most over the past week. I went from rank 5 to rank 1, 3 stars or something like that with that deck exclusively almost in my last few games with Druid. And Kindly Grandmother just didn't perform that well with this deck, less with a couple changes here and there, of course. I think I tried one Howlmaster sometimes. I tried all the one drops in there at some point or another. Abusive Sergeant, Argent Squire. And it didn't perform well over the course of like 80 games.
What if you went, say, like double abusive, one kill command instead of two? Like, because that can allow you to like slot in because finding room for the abusives in your current list is probably the issue. Like, it's one of the big problems.
I think if I cut anything from this list, it'd be the whole secrets package.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the secrets would be the first thing. Yeah.
Sure.
I'd cut Cloaked Huntress. I'd cut all the traps. I'd add like abusives, one Argent Squire, and maybe Argent Horse Rider.
Argent Horse Rider. I think Horse Rider with Barnes and Squires are pretty good. Like in the same list, they work pretty well together.
Oh, actually, I've never actually hit the Barnes with the Horse Rider before.
It's pretty good. Yeah, it works really well, as far as I've seen at least.
Okay, interesting. So basically, not as good as what everybody was saying, I guess, on first review.
Okay.
And I've only played a little bit with Grandmother. I haven't gotten a chance to sit down and play a ton with it. But I just assumed it was good, though. every time I've played against it, it's been quite annoying. But I tend to play more control-oriented games, so that's obviously a lot better against that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. Well, why don't we wrap up, guys? It's almost been 2 hours. 2 hours of a lot of fun and great Hearthstone talk. TJ, man, pleasure having you on. We gotta have you on again soon, man. Or not soon, but at some point for sure. Could be soon. It could be later. It'd be fun.
Yeah, it was really fun. I talk about Hearthstone for a living, and so I love it. Of course, I love it, and love getting to talk about it without Blizzard's ass right behind me.
Exactly. No, you can totally tell.
Yogg Saron. That's just. Yeah.
Watch what you say, boy.
I mean, they're not as restrictive as they used to be, I think. Like, the casters have more freedom. I think, like, the article Frodan wrote a while back, it's interesting because Frodan...
What did they used to tell you? Did they used to, like, sit there and give
No. Okay. Wait up, Chanman. I never said to anyone, don't say anything negative about any player ever. Don't criticize players. They might have mentioned that they want positivity. That's one of the things that's, like, a trademark of the way they want casters to interact. And Frodan was kind of telling people that at the time, because Blizzard was asking that, as far as I'm aware. So the article that he wrote, I hope, kind of made Blizzard reconsider that, the stance of like pure positivity all the time. That's one of the big things.
I hope so. I mean, his articles were great, so I would hope they were taking that into account, but... I didn't realize they were giving you that much. I mean, obviously, I can understand, you know, being very cautious around them, but I didn't know if they gave you guys instructions or not. But it sounds like they did, you know, just being positive. That's not bad instructions.
They give you general feedback, but it's for how they want it's how they want their broadcast to be presented. I've never been explicitly told not to say a word. I've never been explicitly told not to not call out a misplay. I've never been explicitly told, like, you can't do that. But they will give you feedback and say, hey, the way you pointed out that guy's misplay was a little harsh. Like, maybe next time, like, they don't want you calling people bad players. They want you to, like, to explain the situation in a light that most people will understand as, wow, this player is great, is good most of the time, but he made an error in judgment. So
a little slip up, yeah. I could see.
Yeah, they never explicitly tell you not to do anything, but they do give feedback, and they do have an idea of how they want their broadcast to be presented, and they'll give you feedback based off of that. But it's never, don't say that, TJ.
Yeah,
well, that's good. Don't say that word. It's really, it's not as bad. Again, like I feel like there was a huge bandwagon for a while. People were like, yeah, you know, Blizzard just wants to silence the casters, you know, and it just wasn't that.
Yeah, good. I mean, that's good to hear for sure. But TJ, so why don't we do some shout outs? TJ, where can people find you?
Twitter mostly. I don't have a Facebook page yet, but on Twitter at AsmoQD. I only tweet two things. I only tweet when I'm going live at an event and memes. So if you like watching, I also tweet pictures of my dogs and my wife. So that, but those are the only three things. So if you like any of those three things, then you can follow me. And yeah, big shout out to you guys for inviting me on. It was really fun. Really fun.
Awesome. Noxious, where can people find you?
YouTube, Noxious Jelly Chef. That's pretty much it. Shout out to Complexity for the support and for getting, like, I really like the fact that Soddle's casting now. Crane's doing pretty good competitively. Super JJ, a little bit exhausted, but, you know, he'll get back in once he's ready to keep hardcoring it again. I just really like the way the team's growing. We had some rough times early on, but it's getting better.
Yeah, good stuff. And I'll round things up by giving a shout out to you guys for doing the show. It was a ton of fun today. And all everybody else that tuned in and watched, lots of friends watching today too. So thanks for doing that. The VODs will be up on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/ChanManV, and probably 30 minutes, 40 minutes. It's usually around that time. So if you miss any of the show, you can find it there. All the iTunes list.